And why has the data not been shared?
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Thursday, January 28th, 2021, jam-packed show for you today. We're going to start with a little bit of foreign policy, you know, make you eat your vegetables before we get to the good stuff. Sort of being facetious, but the point is this stuff is very important, and even I have been putting it off in regard to how important COVID-19 is. But we're going to talk about that because you all should know by now how obviously tied in foreign policy is with the larger agenda that's happening. But these are some interesting points that tie in with Biden and where this is going. Quick points to start out with and showing you what's going on with Iran, which, as you've been hearing from us, Whitney as well, we feel this is being tied in or will be with Iran and the domestic terrorism concept, even with COVID-19. So it'll be very relevant. We're going to talk about the domestic terrorism push here, Biden's administration, and then how this whole GameStop fiasco is really just, as everyone's pointing out, who's honest enough to point it out, is this is exposing how wildly corrupt this entire thing is. Not just the Wall Street and the way the whole stock market operates, but how even once other people begin to play the game the way they do, uh-oh, wait a minute, you can't cheat like we do. Oh, now we're going to manipulate and remove things and keep you out of it. It's so obvious how broken this whole thing is. And it's not just the stock market I'm talking about. We're also going to talk about, of course, COVID-19 and a very important thing that you saw there in the beginning. The Chinese CDC saying that they didn't isolate the virus. Now, we'll get into it. You can look at it for yourself. And it doesn't mean just because he stated it that it's true. Doesn't mean that he couldn't be wrong. Doesn't mean that he's not lying. The point is, there's so much going on out there. It's easy to pretend that something is discredited or pretend that that's not valid because it came from this source or that source. But nonetheless, it's obviously relevant that this person just said exactly what you just heard. And you'll hear it again once we get into the COVID point about them saying they haven't isolated. Now, also point out, that doesn't then mean that other people haven't. But you know my stance on this. We've gotten into the points and we'll come around to the whole damn thing. But we're also going to talk about masks and revisit the bacterial pneumonia discussion. Something that I've talked about, but we're going to go a little deeper on why I think this is very clearly part of what's happening and how obviously they know the stuff that I'm talking about, and are, as well as the fact that they pointed out that they should have been treating this, what they deem a secondary problem, as the primary source of stopping the pandemic all the way back then. And yet now we act like we don't know what to do as we only focus on one treatment for one thing and nothing else matters. Clearly, there's politics being played in this, which means that they don't care about the cost to your life, to your livelihood, to your family, and so on. So before we get into everything else, I want to talk about a little bit of foreign policy. Now, this is something that I recently shared on Twitter, Ignatius J. Riley shared on Twitter. And this is just incredible to see, to kind of setting the tone here for what Israel's government always, the relationship it's always had with the U.S. government, but seeing it clearly with Biden as well. The idea that, as you can see, Israel warned Biden against rejoining the JCPOA. You know, the nuclear deal with Iran that the U.S. unilaterally pulled out of. They're threatening Biden not to do something. How is that, first of all, recognize that this is a foreign government telling your president that they aren't supposed to be doing something? Let's make sure you understand that. And adding its ordered forces to step up preparations for possible actions against Iran. So kinetic bombing attacks against Iran. Or let's be clear, that's what they're insinuating, but, you know, offensive action can mean a lot of things. But it says, basically, so do what we want or else. What a great ally. This is the point, guys. It's not about working together. It's about using Israel's government has influence over our government's policy that has nothing to do with what you want or what's best for Americans. I mean, we must see that by now. And this is the important thing about this discussion, is that it's always been there. It's very clear. And the only thing we get is, oh, well, it's racist to point out this obvious fact. And when I say obvious fact, I mean the fact that it's very clear that Israel's government absolutely has influence over this government's policy. I don't know how that can be construed as racist, but they'll try to find a way because that's the thing they don't want you talking about in this topic. But we're going to see this going forward with Iran. This is going to be driven. And whether, you know, Biden is as kind of a pushover in regard to Israel's policy as Trump was, that is yet to be seen. But I think it's going to be just as much, if not more, as Mr. I'm a Zionist Joe Biden is clearly on that side of the argument. And he stated as much before. And that's, of course, doing things for Israel's government at the expense of Americans' interest. Because, well, they're our ally, and we have to protect their interest against for all these terrible things that we are manufacturing overseas, and so on. But here's what we continue to see. Things like this, where here's caught for, and I know this is on the lower scale of what, I mean, at the way lower scale of the illegal actions routinely committed by Israel, but this is images of Israel's F-35 stealth jets, you know, that clearly you can see the tie over from the U.S. government operating within Lebanese airspace. That's a crime, right? May not be the biggest crime in the world, but that's very clearly a serious crime that if in reverse would be taken way out of proportion. If anybody the U.S. government didn't like was violating U.S. airspace, it would be an act of war. And so, too, it would be here. The problem is that they know what will happen if they respond. The U.S. and Israel will act like they acted first and attack them. But it's disgusting how clearly these groups are rampantly lawless. They do not care about what is allowable, only what they can do with power. But yet they will use that against other people and say, well, you have to follow the U.N. mandates. You have to follow the JCPOA. You have to follow human rights and international law, but we don't. As Vanessa Bealey points out, yesterday she visited Kazu Western Hamah, recently targeted by Israel. Five members of the same family died. One baby pulled from the rubble later died in a hospital. Family had fled death 4 months ago only to die when they slept on a Zionist attack. She spoke to neighbors who tried to rescue the family and heard heartbreaking stories. This happens every single time, guys. This is constant. Think about Yemen. Think about, well, I mean, I definitely feel Israel plays a part there, but I mean, just in the context of this horrible foreign policy, that happens constantly where Saudi Arabia will murder families and nobody does anything about it. But Syria, Palestine, constant. Even Iraq. Where's the international community? Well, they don't care when it happens from this government. It's disgusting. Well, on top of that, Blinken, the new Secretary of State, is saying Iran now must comply with the nuclear deal before the U.S. does. See how this works? So now Netanyahu comes out and basically says, no, 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 don't do that. And then suddenly Blinken steps in and inserts something that guarantees it won't happen. That's always how this goes. Now understand, let me explain why that is, and then we'll jump into some of the domestic terrorism points that will roll right into COVID-19. It says, in a sign that the U.S. is a long way from lifting sanctions on Iran, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said the U.S. will not return to the nuclear deal until Iran comes back into compliance. Okay, so you guys should know by now that that either means that Mr. Blinken is so ignorant of the JCPOA that he hasn't even read it, doesn't even understand what Article 36 actually says, or he's lying to you. Or, I mean, lying definitely, but, you know, manipulating the narrative to make it seem like Iran's the one that's not in compliance as opposed to the United States government. This is the disgusting part of all this. Here is Article 36 of the JCPOA. This is directly from europarlament.europa.eu. This is the European Parliament website. And this is the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. You can see it right here. This is the dispute resolution mechanism. I've shown this so many times. Now, yes, this may not be as fun and exciting for people out there that are looking for the big COVID news, but this is important, guys. This is really important to how they're abusing their power, which right now we are victims of. But it's been happening overseas for as long as I've been alive. So here's what's happening. This is the Article 36. 26 is also relevant, but I'll talk about that later. I have in the past. Here is what it says. If Iran believed that any or all of the E3 EU plus three were not meeting their commitments under this JCPOA, so any other people, any others involved in the JCPOA were not meeting what they were supposed to, Iran could refer the issue to the Joint Commission for resolution. The Joint Commission would have 15 days to resolve the issue unless the time period was extended by consensus. After a joint commission consideration, any participant could refer the issue to ministers of foreign affairs if it believed the compliance issue had not been resolved. So again, it's the, so in Iran's case, they have the right to continue to push this, whether or not the U.S. said we did comply, which they didn't, and no one believes that. Now, I don't even believe they're pretending like they did. They're just simply pointing at Iran and saying they aren't complying. Now, it says ministers would have 15 days to resolve the issue unless the time period was extended by consensus. Now, here's the important part. Make sure you can see it. Oh, here, let me adjust the screen really quickly so you guys can get a full shot of what that says. Okay, now it says, if the issue was still not been resolved, now there's another 15-day mechanism between those two, but regardless, after all of these, if it hadn't been resolved to the satisfaction of the complaining participant, meaning Iran in this case, it wouldn't matter what the U.S. said or whether they actually complied. The point is, if Iran still felt it wasn't resolved, and if the complaining participant deemed the issue to constitute significant non-performance, so it's all in the court of the person who is making the claim, whether U.S. or Iran, in this case, Iran, then that participant could treat the unresolved issue, such as sanctions being reinstated, such as pulling out of the agreement, they could treat that unresolved issue as grounds to cease performing its commitments under this joint comprehensive plan of action in whole or in part, and or notify the UN Security Council, which it did, that it believes the issue constitutes significant non-performance. And every single step of the way, they have included the UN, they've included every part of this and told everybody, in a week from now, we're going to breach within the deal, which is when the US or the media usually cuts that part out, only shows you the one part, that we will breach the deal within the agreement until they come back to the table. Now, the reason I wanted to go through this again is to show you how aggressively dishonest these people are. They're in compliance is the point. Iran is currently in compliance with the JCPOA, as anyone honest can tell, and as and people involved with that are pointing out. Anybody asked why nobody else has ever left the JCPOA? Other than the U.S. government, because they all know that that would constitute the very thing that would give Iran the freedom to do what the U.S. is claiming that they're doing, which is not a violation, yet that's what they're saying. It's insulting, and for a lot of people, it's dizzying how ridiculous it is. But they'll continue to say this, and they'll continue to pretend that, well, they're not doing what they're supposed to, so that's why we're not doing it. But we wanted to, and Biden wanted to. We want peace. That's nonsense. They're setting this up to manipulate the situation, as Javad Zarif has continued to point out, and the media will interview him and they just casually leave that part out. Which means the media are well aware that they're hiding the point. This will all be in here for you to look at. I recommend if you have the time, you read the whole damn thing. Read and understand what these things are and what they mean. Here's 26 as well. I won't go over it, but it just simply talks about more of the same idea. Now, moving forward on to where this is all leading to. Now, I definitely believe that Iran, or really more specifically, some kind of foreign threat, most likely Iran, China, or Russia, will be used in combination with what they're claiming are a domestic terror issue. It's going to be something that they say, well, that's these people working with them. I mean, we've heard the white supremacists working with Al-Qaeda, which now we've been told Al-Qaeda is working with Iran, right? You see them making the connection. It's clumsy, but they're trying. And now they're going to make this happen, just like we told you was going to happen. I guess we just continue to be psychic, right? No, it's because we see who these people are, and we know, we can see how transparent their clumsy, ham-fisted plans are. They continue to do the same damn thing. They're banking on your apathy. America at large, I'm speaking to, not just the people in the chat. People in the chat, I argue you probably don't have much apathy, but the point is people out there have been engineered to just fall back into their couch and say, well, they know best. I don't understand what's happening, and that's because of their continually contradicting reports. So they hope that you just sit back and go, well, you guys take it from here. I'll trust you. They bank on that. Just in, the Department of Homeland Security issues National Terrorism Advisory System bulletin warning. There is currently a heightened threat environment across the U.S. that is likely to persist over the coming weeks. Cool. So we'll just take them at face value. Right, so they don't give you, I mean, they give you details, but these are about things that have been happening beforehand or just kind of arbitrary concepts about things that are happening. And by the way, understand, every single thing that they list here, there's already a law for. They could already be arrested for. So why do we need this again? Oh, because they want you to believe that this is a specific threat that needs more attention, which will be, you know, clearly written into the larger discussion for everything in this country, which will constantly be there forever, just like the 9/11 Patriot Act. That's what this is. This is Patriot Act 2.0. It'll never go away, despite what they tell you. Because it's power. It's control. Always what this is about. The summary: the acting Secretary of Homeland Security has issued a National Terrorism Advisory System bulletin due to a heightened threat environment across the United States. I mean, you could have maybe argued that before the election. Does anybody feel that right now? I sure don't. In fact, I'm talking to most people that I find the opposite right now. I feel like almost in a weird way, we're starting to see a little bit of cohesion between people that might have been different sides, because we're all recognizing how broken this government is. We are all beginning to see how little they care about our lives, whether you're Democrat or Republican or independent or green or whatever. They don't care about us. And we're beginning to see that. Not just this country, by the way, the world is sort of beginning to kind of awaken from this stupor to find out that they have been stepping on your neck this whole time while telling you that they're... You know, what's the good way to put that? That they've been propping you up as the opposite? I mean, it's obvious that they're, you know, what's the classic, I don't want to get bogged down in the analogies, but it's very clear that they are not what they are being, what we're being told they are. They're selling themselves as the altruistic hero that's here to do everything at their expense to make your life better. But in reality, very clearly, which we're all beginning to see is the point, it's the diametric opposite. They will constantly sell you out to achieve their goals at the drop of a hat. Now, here's the alarming part. This doesn't expire until April 30th. So all the way until April 30th, that we're under some kind of threat, which gives them heightened power. And this is the kind of thing that slowly and markedly increases the surveillance, the loss of your rights, the crackdown on the border. I mean, everything. This is going to close in around you. Until maybe the next bill happens, or this one just ends up being forever. But this is where it's all going. This is about you, and it always has been. Now they're straight up saying domestic terrorism. It's about you. Pelosi's now saying more security needed for U.S. Congress against the enemy within. Now, of course, they take this in a direction that's very specific, and I almost wonder whether this whole gun being brought to the Capitol thing by a member of Congress was I very clearly question whether that was intentional and absolutely a plan to spin this whole conversation up. But regardless, enemy within means much, much more than just a couple of people in Congress they fear. It means you. It means that they believe Americans are their enemy. Not all of them, maybe. I actually believe that's what it is, them versus us. But at the end of the day, there's a part of this country that they do not agree with. As our government, not left or right. You know, and that tends to be the people that believe in the Constitution. Go figure. Now, Nancy Pelosi said on Thursday, lawmakers would probably need more funding for security as the enemy is within the House. Now, clearly, they're building this whole narrative. It's about Republicans. It's because they want to build the divide. I mean, think of how insulting it is. I mean, it's as stupid as claiming a movement that is calling themselves anti-fascist while they're literally creating fascist movements, or people that are screaming about how racism is bad while literally screaming racist things. It's absurd where we are today, but it's the same idea here. They want to create that narrative. So it's about the Republicans versus, you know, it's contradictory, everything about what they're doing. It's about dividing us. It's about fighting us against each other. That's what it really comes down to. Following a warning by the Homeland Security Department of Heightened Threats. So perfectly timed. So they bring out this big threat. Then she all of a sudden brings up this big thing about how we need more funding for security. Now you're going to be totally shocked to find out where that basically it's giving them a carte blanche to use their funding for security as they see fit. Gee, I wonder if that'll go towards security or plenty of other things we'll find out about later. But the Department of Homeland Security did not cite specific threats in their bulletin, which was issued on Wednesday, which I just pointed out. But it did say domestic violent extremists may feel emboldened by the Capitol rampage. Oh, cool. So we're guessing. So maybe things could get bad. So let's just spend more, because maybe. Well, maybe we're all going to starve to death because you ruined our jobs. How about we give money for that maybe? And it's pretty much not a maybe. This is where they're just simply saying there's no threat we see, but we sense some things going on. So more danger. Be afraid. Quote, we will probably need a supplemental for more security members when the enemy is within the House of Representatives. So we need more money. So we just spent out trillions and trillions of dollars. They already get paid. What does she get? $400,000 a year. But yeah, but they're going to, let's pass another bill, which I'm sure they'll do within minutes, but we'll take 3 years to figure out something for us. But quick, more money for security, which will then be used at your discretion. Asked what she meant when referring to the enemy within, she said it means we have members of Congress who want to bring guns on the floor and who have threatened violence against other members of Congress. Well, that second part of that statement is actually, I mean, you could, this is the same way they're bending things about people. Trump says, make sure you go home and be safe. And they're like, oh, wink, wink, he meant insurrection. It's just nonsense. Did people make comments against each other? That's what these children in their kindergarten Congress room do all the time. A bunch of childish attacks on each other. But the point is about bringing guns on the floor. Now, first of all, let's understand, one, do we not all have a right to the Second Amendment? Yes. Then the idea is, was this legal? Did he own it? Was it registered? Now, I take issue with that law in a general sense, but this is for another day. The point is, all of these things are either undefined or yes. And yet they're still making it out to be some kind of huge thing. Why? Because it's all driving towards this. That's it. It's about creating the context for why we're in a really dangerous time. And we are, just not the way they're telling you we are. We're in a dangerous situation because of what they're doing to us. But it says most changes members sought, including allowing them more flexibility in using their office budgets to cover security expenses. Great. So now they're going to take the money they've been giving for their office budgets, which comes out of your pocket, for them to spend on themselves that they'll say is security. Maybe some of it will be. Guess what, though? It's at their discretion. Had already been made, though, Pelosi said. So it's already done. Just decided just like that. We said one thing. We didn't even prove you this really what's going on, but we're already making moves on this before we even talked about it to the media. And more will probably be done, she says. Congress, which had been easy for the public to visit compared to other Washington institutions like the White House, has been put on heightened security measures since what happened on January 6th, which you've seen, which will probably never go away, as they've already told us at least through March. But last week, Republican lawmaker Andy Harris was apparently found carrying a concealed gun while trying to enter the House floor. Now, just stated like this, oh man, especially from a Democrat position in the two-party illusionists, it seems like this big deal, like they're going to make it into, and this is what the media has already done with the Capitol and everything else. What if he was going to assassinate somebody? What if this? What if that? That's what our media is doing today. Is that journalism? I mean, what if he was secretly ISIS? I mean, what if anything? What if all of them are aliens? I mean, it's ridiculous to continue to do that, but that's what is literally happening in the mainstream journalism sphere with the Capitol and everything else. All hypothetical. All we have is a man who walked in with a firearm he owns in a country where he's allowed to have one. Let's dig in a little further. Watchdog group seeks investigation of whether he actually violated gun laws. So the point being is, as she's screaming about this and already taking actions to give themselves more freedom with your tax dollars, they don't even know for sure if he even broke a law. Think about how stupid that is. Now it says, now he may have violated several laws, including one barring the possession of a weapon not registered in the District of Columbia. Point being, they have yet to even find out whether he had it registered in D.C. I just jumped to the end there. You'll find out at the end. Of course, that's way at the end. But think about how crazy that is, that this is already being used to justify more spending for security when it might have not even been what they're claiming it is. Sort of like that's a microcosm for every government action of all time. Representative Harris is not above the law, they say, and the U.S. Attorney's Office must investigate. Oh, so he's not above the law, but we have yet to investigate, so we're not even sure if he broke any laws. But he's not above the law. See how the narrative was already in line before this even got off the shelf. Now it says Shu said last week that Harris's and his family's lives, quote, have been threatened by somebody. He did not identify the person, quote, who has been released awaiting trial. So what they're saying is they have been threatened by somebody who was recently released from prison. Isn't that like the most logical possible reason to arm yourself for protection? Yes. Is it his right to do so? Yes. Now it says Harris did not bring the weapon onto the floor. DC law requires that firearms registered to local police. Now members are permitted to carry guns on the Capitol grounds, which is what he did. So he was allowed to do that and he didn't bring it on the ground on the floor. So what's the issue here? manufactured, including the building itself, but not in the chamber, which he didn't do. Now, it says the statement said Harris said in Maryland he has a gun permit, but he did not say if it's registered in Washington. Probably because that, I mean, now this has to be fleshed out. Did he refuse to answer that? Well, it's really murky, isn't it? The point is they probably don't know. And this is how they're stretching this out to be something more. Alina Gertz, a spokeswoman for Washington's police department, told The Sun in an email on Wednesday, quote, any person that wants to carry a firearm in D.C. must adhere to D.C.'s firearm laws and register it in D.C. Gertz did not say if Harris had registered his gun in D.C. Oh, good. We'll just leave it open-ended forever. So you can always wonder whether this was an assassination attempt or just a very normal event where the person did exactly what he was supposed to, did not break any laws, and Nancy Pelosi uses it to spend a lot more money on, they claim, security. I guess we'll never find out. This is the kind of thing that just baffles me. But this is the systematic degradation of the constitutional rights, or the constitutional right in regard to carrying a firearm, your Second Amendment. Over the time, they've been chopping away at this. And same with freedom of speech. Acting like freedom of speech has its limits, which is ridiculous. Or the idea that that thing somehow creates more violence, or that the idea that this Second Amendment is not really what it means, and they're just constantly chopping away at it while pretending like they swear an oath to the Constitution. It's quite pathetic, but these people don't care at all about anything. Nothing is sacred. And on the Capitol building discussion, because I find this to be very relevant to the whole big illusion we're talking about here, here's the entirely expected FBI connection to the Capitol building PSYOP. You might have already seen this. It was on the 27th. I doubt it's the only one. Proud Boy leader Enrique Tarrio was a prolific informer for law enforcement. If you haven't seen that, let that sink in a second. Just like we were saying, remember when this was beginning? Remember when this was about to start and they were going, the Capitol, there's going to be attacks, something's going to happen, everybody be scared. This was before it happened. And the media were telling you this was going to happen and then acted totally shocked and off guard when nothing really happened, but they told you the thing that said was going to happen and they weren't prepared for didn't really happen, but it did. I'm trying to be confusing, just trying to be funny, but the point is, This is exactly what we said was, like, we said, okay, what's the likelihood that these very militias that they're saying will be present already have FBI informants? Well, guess what? It's exactly right. That's exactly what did happen. The likelihood is obviously very good because here we are. Not only just a random guy, but the leader of this group was a prolific enforcement or law enforcement informer. Immediate questions. Did he maintain the connections in his Proud Boys role? Did he get special treatment? What was known about DC? Now, there's an article here. The articles are here for you to check out for yourself. Passed as an informer for federal law and local law enforcement. Repeatedly working undercover for investigators after he was arrested in 2012. Think about that. This is a guy who was involved with all of this. And we're wondering now whether the FBI played a role in this obvious PSYOP that took place. You know, like the FBI is involved with most of the things that they claim they're stopping, which we've talked about repeatedly. And sometimes even having the very person leading and planning everything, being an FBI informant, and then just kind of wrapping up people that got caught up with it all and saying they did everything. This is incredible. Now, I'm not saying I can verifiably prove that this person started or faked or did all of this or the FBI played a role, but how incredible is it that every time we see something like this, it's not a shock at all to see an FBI person tied up in all of it from the beginning. As Malcolm points out, wow, Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio was a snitch, explains his quick arrest and expulsion before the storming of the Capitol, keeps him safe and allows FBI to roll up the group with solid inside intelligence. Can we not see by now, guys, this whole damn thing was a psychological operation? I mean, this is what this was. Q was a CIA, specifically based on what we just recently learned, most likely an FBI operation. But there's plenty of other things we could point to in regard to, I mean, I argue when these things happen, it's far more than just one of these entities involved. Nonetheless, this is clearly a intelligence manipulation. I mean, look at where we are now. How do we still think? Oh, yeah, that's right. He's going to be president on March 4th. Just keep your head down and wait till then. Crazy. If you still believe that this is something that you thought it was before, I plead with you to, I don't know, pay better attention. I want you guys to come over and help us change what's really going on. Please don't get sucked back into what's happening with this manipulation. I mean, for those that don't know, they're literally claiming now that somehow there's a secret thing that happened and they allowed Biden to be president just so it wasn't confusing for the American people, but technically Trump is actually president. There's also another theory about him becoming president again on March 4th. And this is all Q stuff, and it baffles me that people are still actually going along with this. Crazy, crazy. But on the economic side of it, just so we're talking about the same corrupt group, you know, Kamala Harris and Biden at this point, but we're talking about the government. Trump and Pence to Biden and Kamala, the same thing. This is the same direction with a different face. BlackRock, of course, you remember the group that made the plan before all of this to bail out the financial collapse of this country and then pretended that they did it for COVID-19 despite them making it before this ever started. Right, all verified, but yeah, we don't know anything. Picked Kamala Harris, or rather, this is the article specifically. BlackRock executive picked as Kamala Harris's top economic advisor. Weird. What do you know? The group that basically controls the Fed and the Treasury is now leading the economic advisor for Kamala Harris. Yeah, that's not a surprise. I mean, it's Obama and Goldman Sachs all over again. I mean, we are corrupted. This system is broken. And it has nothing to do with what you want. It is special interests. I mean, if you don't need, how many times do we need to point out that Princeton study that very clearly proves that as an American, you have zero, statistically insignificant, near zero, direct quote, effect on public policy. Zero. No matter who votes, 100% of Americans vote for something, it has about a 30% chance of passing. That is a direct finding from Princeton. It completely hinges on people like this. It hinges on the elitists and their wealth. And the lobbyists, you don't have effect. You can think about that in regard to policy votes or the president. It's the same difference, guys. I don't know why we can't see this by now. But where this is going is to show us how corrupt this is from an economic level, which, of course, brings us to the GameStop fiasco. Now, this is an AP article, but there's a couple that at this point, with any stories like this, I recommend you do your research and don't just take the mainstream overview of it because it's very rarely correct. But I wanted to start with this one just because there was a couple of interesting points to quickly give you a breakdown on this. So basically, from my research on this, research forward, it seems to have started on Reddit, where they're essentially, I think it was Wall Street Bets, where essentially they are gaming the system, but in the way that it happens every single day. It's in the way that Wall Street games the system against you. Basically, we have AMC is in a part of this as well, but GameStop is a favorite for shorting in Wall Street. Meaning, I'll just read through this because it explains it right down here. But the point is that this is something they were doing, and which, you know, is betting for GameStop to fail, essentially. And under this pandemic, all these businesses are going out of business, and it's these people. Doesn't it bother you that these people in Wall Street are all betting on you to fail and making money? It's bothersome. But so these people decided to make GameStop go up and did so with their influence I believe they even had it trending on Twitter. And because they're claiming they did this for, I guess, dishonest reasons, whatever the world that means in Wall Street, which is like, that's all they have down there. Somehow it means that it's not okay because the big guys lost money. You can't have that. What this does show you is that this is how the system is only meant to work in their favor, not yours. And because they made this work, they're fighting back, deleting things, stopping you from being able to play their game. This needs to show us how crazy broken it all is. This is a Ponzi scheme. The stock market is literally a Ponzi scheme. Lee Camp did a great video on this and shows us how at one point you actually bought stocks and you got a stock in a company, right? You buy money, you get some money and you get a stock in Apple or whatever. That's not how it works in most of these large companies anymore. You buy in, you don't get stocks. You buy in and you get, well, you do, but it goes up based on what other people buy, which it does in a general sense. But the point is that it's not actually like you own physical stock in Apple. You just basically have something that goes up in value the more people buy. And the more that they sells, the more you lose. That's a Ponzi scheme. That's a pyramid scheme. Look it up sometime and actually compare the concept of what a pyramid scheme is and what the Wall Street and what the stock market is. It's the same thing. Now, whether or not you want to play that, because you can make money on a pyramid scheme, that's up to you. But they frame it as some kind of, you know, honorable system while they attack things like cryptocurrency and whatever else, because that's outside of their control still for the most part. But as it says here, several trading platforms limited their customers from making certain trades with GameStop. This is after this frenzy began, stopping them from being able to participate. Now, it says it's all forcing hard questions about whether the stock market is in a dangerous bubble and whether a new generation of traders, get this, should be allowed to take full advantage of all the tools and free trades available on their phones, regardless of how reckless they may seem to outsiders. That, I mean, think about how crazy that is. So you're, so because you have a phone and because you have something like Robinhood's clearly playing a whole part in this, and you're, which is a trading app on your phone, and you can get involved and start doing what you want, but because you have, they claim you've got bad intentions, what does that even mean? And because you're what, using online platforms to get people to do it all with you and you make it, that is exactly what these big traders do. Literally. Now here's what it says. Reddit's involved, right? Now this is the group called Wall Street Bets. Now they've recently been encouraging others to, and this is prior to how it all started really being serious, to buy GameStop and push it even higher to go to, you know, to the moon, which is a constant classic cryptocurrency thing, as far as I understand. So at what point is this wrong, right? You're, especially when you're dealing with a company that is struggling and now they're doing quite well, or at least the stock is. Now it says that alone pushed the stock market up over 1,000%. No, but a big reason for that is how deeply hated GameStop stock was by hedge funds and other professional investors on Wall Street. Many of them were betting on GameStop's stock to fall by shorting it. Now, this is important so you understand what shorting it actually means. It's how, and this is a part, shorting I dislike on a strong way. They actually started bringing in shorts in the cryptocurrency market, and right off the bat, you saw how they manipulated how it flowed. Now, it says it's how investors can make money off of a stock failing. It says falling, but I'm also adding failing. In a short sale, they borrow a share of GameStop and then sell it. Now later, if the stock price does as they expect, they can buy the stock at a lower price and keep the difference. Now GameStop is one of the most heavily shorted stocks on Wall Street. Now more than that even, you can actually bet for something to fail, which is short. Essentially, if the stock were to go down, you would make money, which is what a lot of them are doing in regard to these companies, which actually hurts the companies. So in the same way, if you get together with all of your friends and I'm blanking on the word, I shouldn't say friends in regard to Wall Street, but you know, they use their clout and their community to short it. One guy hears they're doing it, they do it too, and that does hurt the stock. And is that because the stock's doing bad? No, it's because they're shorting it and people are picking up on it as well. So it's all artificial. Now it says, what's a short squeeze? It's what happened with GameStop stock. And here's the important part. When a stock is very heavily shorted, like from Wall Street and other stocks they do all the time, a rise in its price can force the short sellers to get out of their bets, right? So they short it expecting to make money because they've got some inside word or because they're gaming the system. And suddenly a bunch of Redditors jump in and play the game back at them. And all of a sudden GameStop goes incredibly high. They're infuriated because what it did is force them to do this. It forces them to actually buy back stock and then sell it, which makes it go up even more. They have to buy the stock, which makes it go up even more. And then it says it creates a feedback loop as GameStop short sellers have gotten squeezed this month. The people trying to game it and undermine it are actually losing their ass right now because of these Redditors. And I think it's gone well beyond Reddit at this point. And this is where we are now. And it says, do these smaller investors believe, get this, do they believe in GameStop's business? Are they kidding? Are we really going to pretend like all these people in Wall Street believe in everything they're investing in? Or they believe in they short it because they believe it's not good enough to be there? Does that play a factor in anything? They're doing it because they want to make money and they're willing to lie, cheat, and steal and abuse everything. And nobody questions what goes on in these Wall Street stock market circles. And these people are saying games buying, it's not about greed. Like they're having to come out and defend what they're doing as if what they're doing on a regular basis in Wall Street is not about greed. It's disgusting but here's where it gets even worse, guys. Just to make it funny, Brandy's pointing out, oh no, the wrong people are manipulating the stock market. Writers expose how arbitrary and meaningless the entire basis of the U.S. economy is. Exactly. It's a game. It's gambling on your money. Mega investors punished with $70 billion losses as GameStop and other shorted firms see stock surge. So understand, they were all gaming this to lose. They thought they had the inside word. And these people, you know, whatever you want to call it, these 4chan, 8chan, Redditors, these internet whatever. I mean, there's a lot of power between these communities and they act like they don't exist. They stepped in and they screwed them. They made it happen. And I frankly love it. I think these people are constantly abusing us in every way, whether you even realize it's them doing it. And all that happened is they stepped in and played it better than them. And then they flipped out. They started removing people. They started blocking things. So I'll get to it in a second. I wanted to point out what Glenn Greenwald pointed out. He said, first of all, this is Josh Barrow from the Business Insider saying, I know people think this is fun talking about what's going on, but as if it's not about making money or playing the stock market the same way they do. It's about sticking it to the man, which, by the way, it is in some degree, but they're making it like that's all. Like, they're just having fun. As if the rest of it's all serious. Why do we have a stock market? So productive firms can raise capital to do useful things. Come on, guy. What is this, 1930 or 40? It's ridiculous to pretend like that's what this really is anymore. The stock market is a gambling center. It has nothing. I mean, yes, there are parts of it that operate this way, but it's so completely corrupt. Detaching stock price from fundamental value, GameStop is now worth almost as much as Best Buy, good, makes the market serve as real economy. Serve the real economy worse. So exactly. So the thing that they do constantly is exactly what he's talking about. But he only cares about it when normal people do it. But he says, please leave the merit-based, incredibly fair and rational system of capital known as Wall Street alone. This just isn't fair what's being done to them. Thank you, Glenn, for clearly making fun of how stupid that was. But here's the best part. Glenn says the only possible way to have that above exerted reaction to the GameStop Reddit rebellion is if you grew up coddled in very elite environment that somehow got you to believe all the way in adulthood this childlike mythology about American culture and politics. Elites are usually elite for a good reason, Josh says, and tend to have better judgment than the average person. Confess your run popular opinion. No, confess your unpopular opinion, it says. But can you believe that? This is a mainstream media writer, propagandist, saying that they're elite because they're better than you. Which I believe he deleted. Because this is a very common sentiment, like the same thing we saw from a lot of different places, which I'll show you in a minute. AMC saw this as well, by the way. AMC being a theater that's clearly struggling with everything. But as it says, that's today. This was January 27th. AMC was to that day's GameStop. A Reddit mob sent its stock more than 20% higher. Well, you know, it's so pathetic. Why isn't this just seen as a pause? I mean, they didn't get what they expected to happen, and that's why they're upset. I'm sure somebody out there made a lot of money, whether or not they knew this was going to happen. Are they upset? No. They don't like that they're being gamed the same way they game you every day. But it says, as Robinhood imposes restrictions now on trading stocks associated with the recent Reddit buzz. Why? Because they're not in control anymore. Not Robinhood, I mean, but the people in control who are constantly guiding and manipulating everything. Well, they don't know what's going to happen next, so they make sure you can't keep playing. Attention turns to Citadel Securities, which pays Robinhood to gain information on what retail investors are doing. A not uncommon process referred to as payment for order flow through Citadel Securities is a different firm than the Citadel hedge fund that infuses billions into Melvin Capital, Bloomberg reports. Justin says, just got a tip that Citadel reloaded their shorts before they told Robinhood to stop trading. If it's true, Ken Griffin and the Robinhood founder should be in jail. This is class warfare. I don't do offline. That's where she, I don't want to read the curse word, but the point is, guys, this is crazy. I mean, this is such a flagrant example of how we are not meant to play in their elitist circles. And now they're just shutting it down because we are participating. Robinhood reportedly selling people's positions of GameStop without letting them know. Can you believe that? I mean, good God, that's incredible because they're not accountable. They're scared and they show you that they act with impunity. Investors filed class action lawsuit, good for them, against Robinhood over GameStop stonk suppression, which is I won't even get into. But the point is, it's very obvious that these people are abusing their power. Trading app Robinhood shuts down GameStop stock. Not just stopping, but shuts it down after Reddit traders embarrass Wall Street. Exactly. GameStop's Reddit-fueled surge exposes public anger over Wall Street's power. At least somebody's pointing it out. I mean, that this is what it's really about. They have unlimited power. But here's what CNN wants you to think. Sort of how they want you to think that it was some kind of Al-Qaeda, Iran, white supremacist insurrection on the Capitol. Well, white supremacist internet gamers buy GameStop stocks to purposely bankrupt Jewish hedge fund on International Holocaust Remembrance Day. That's their interpretation. Oh, you're looking for facts to back it up? Nope. The only facts they have to back it up is that, well, because people on Reddit are white supremacists, we know that. And because, well, it happened on this day and continued to happen well after that. But because it happened on that day, amongst others, we're going to pretend that it only had to do with this specific Jewish hedge fund manager on this one day. And that's an assumption based on their opinion about what they want you to think about. CNN should be shut. This is disgusting. I mean, what they're doing they should have a right to say whatever they want. But what's incredible is what they're doing is exactly what they pretend we're doing. Straight up manufacturing things based on the narratives they know they want to sell you. I would love for anybody to prove even a slight part of this at all. And understand that, like, are they really going to pretend that only white supremacists were the ones involved with buying GameStop in regard to Reddit? That's what they want you to think. Makes you sick. It really, I mean, for those of us that can see how cartoonish this all is, this is unbelievable that people still buy this stuff. But remembering this, Mr. Business Insider Josh Barrow, elites are usually elite for a good reason and tend to have better judgment than the average person. Again, this is a very common sentiment. Here's an article from the Washington Post. You can't really see because they put paywalls in front of their work because they're struggling and no one reads them anymore. So I wanted to show you first this and then this, which you can't see as well, but I'll show you screenshots, which shows you that it starts off by saying, well, let's give elites a better say in choosing the president, and then quickly scurries away behind mommy's skirts and changes it to something totally different, including the URL, because they weren't ready to, people didn't want to hear it. It's time to give the elites a bigger say in choosing the president. Now, the way I actually found this was by searching the new URL in the Wayback Machine, and yes, it popped this up. So do not, this is absolutely what they changed it to, right here. It's time to switch to preference primaries. Do you understand how crazy it is that the Washington Post is straight up telling you that we should give people in elitist circles that are there by virtue of being rich, that they should choose your president for you? Well, that's what they're telling you. That's why this shouldn't surprise you. Because they see themselves as part of this circle, whether they are or not. Well, I want to read you some of what Ron Paul just pointed out in regard to this. When fascism comes, it will be wearing a mask. And we'll get into masks in a minute, but this is more so about the fascism idea and how this is happening with these executive orders. Now, when Ron Paul, this is a person you should be listening to. Doesn't mean he's always right. I tend to agree with him on damn near everything, but it doesn't mean anybody's always right. The point is that when he speaks, this man deserves your attention. He says, Biden's mask mandates contradict his pledge to follow the science. Studies have not established that masks are effective at preventing the spread of the coronavirus. Regularly wearing a mask, though, can cause health problems, and we'll continue to prove that later in the show. Biden's mask mandates are also an unconstitutional power grab. Some say these mandates are an exercise of the federal government's constitutional authority to regulate interstate commerce. So he's good at showing you this is what they're telling you is supposed to be going on. However, and this is the part where they regularly run afoul, you know, the Constitution. The Constitution gives Congress, not the president, the power to regulate interstate commerce. But wait a minute, didn't Biden just sign an executive order? Yeah, he did. But he doesn't have that power. Yeah, isn't that interesting? The president does not have the authority to issue executive orders regulating interstate commerce, absent authorization by a valid law passed by Congress. The founders gave Congress sole lawmaking authority, and they would be horrified by the modern practice of presidents creating law with a stroke of a pen. They're dictators. I mean, that's what this is. Dictates. They're just simply telling you what to do. Just as important, the Commerce Clause was not intended to give the federal government vast regulatory power. Far from giving the U.S. government powers such as the power to require people to wear masks, the Commerce Clause was simply intended to ensure Congress could protect free trade among the states. And now it's been bent into making you wear a mask. You not see how far off the rails these people are? And executive orders, I understand, are not, I mean, I just was looking it back, and there's a little confusion, too, between executive statements and orders. I tend to see them as generally the same thing, even though there are differences. There's also signing statements. There's a couple different things. But when you look at the past, you can see that Obama, actually Bush before Obama, Bush did more than Obama did. Obama did a little bit less than that, but still a hell of a lot. And then it continues to actually go down from there. But based on the way Biden is starting, yeah, it's a good indication that he might even do more. Trump ended up doing a little bit less than Obama, but all of them are ruling by executive order. But you can go back and look at someone like Roosevelt, and I think it was like 1,000. But it just shows you, and that there's times of war and different things, which, by the way, I still disagree with. It just shows you that this is not as new as we want to make it out to be, but it was always undermining the Constitution from the very moment it started. I should say the moment it was abused. Because you can even go back to look at George Washington, apparently, and who knows if that's being manipulated or not, apparently did at least one executive order. But it's the way it's being abused. I make the point again, the fact that Biden, or rather, you know, his party at this point controls the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. And they don't even try to pass these things in the right way. Think about that. You don't live in a democracy or a representative government. Now it says Biden also signed an executive order supporting using the Defense Production Act. Oh, right. The thing that Trump set him up for. Just like I said. To increase the supply of vaccines. So he's going to use this to increase the supply of vaccines, that can increase the supply of testing supplies and other items deemed essential to respond to coronavirus. So they tell us. But here's the part that's alarming, and this is what I said when this first started. The Defense Production Act is essentially martial law for production. It's alarming. And now we're already under martial law in this country. We need to see that by now. The Defense Production Act is a Cold War relic that gives the president what that can fairly be called dictatorial authority to order private businesses to alter their production plans and violate existing contracts with private customers in order to produce goods for the government. So the idea is they can step in tomorrow and tell your company, well, no, you have to stop what you're doing and make masks or you're going to go to jail. It's like eminent domain for production. It's disgusting. And I've never been okay with stuff like this. Mask and social distancing mandates. And by the way, I think none of us should, because it fundamentally violates the Constitution, regardless of whatever justification and regardless of whether Congress votes and passes it. It's repugnant to the Constitution, hence it's null and void. That is a precedent set by the Supreme Court. Mass and social distancing mandates, government control of private industry, and some of Biden's other executive actions, such as one creating a new public health jobs corps with responsibilities, including performing contact tracing on American citizens, are the type of actions one would expect from a fascist government, not a constitutional republic. Joe Biden, who is heralded by many of his supporters as saving democracy from fascist Trump, could not even wait one day before beginning to implement fascistic measures that are completely unnecessary to protect public health. Biden will no doubt use other manufactured crises, including climate change and domestic terrorism, to expand government power and further restrict our liberty. Under Biden, fascism will not just carry an American flag. It will also carry a mask, or wear a mask. Telling you, if you haven't heard, Ron Paul is well worth your attention. Straight, I mean, he is just, she's not shying away from calling it as he sees it based on his, I mean, every damn reason you could think of for his, why we should listen to what he has to say. But going on to executive orders to make my point even further, the United States Constitution does not have a provision that explicitly permits the use of executive orders. Make sure we understand that. The U.S. Constitution does not have a provision that explicitly permits the use of executive orders. Now, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 1 of the Constitution simply states, "The executive power shall be vested in the President of the United States of America." And that's suddenly become dictatorial powers. But here's the thing that we should remember. U.S. Supreme Court has held that all executive orders from the President of the United States must be supported by the Constitution. Period. Now, that, of course, is why we see them kind of routinely, semi-routinely shot down by the courts. But understand that something like a mask mandate or any of these things are very clearly not supported by the Constitution. It doesn't mean, like Dershowitz, you could point out that, well, this happened back then and this was a precedent. That's not what that says. It's not supported by a precedent of the Supreme Court, not supported by the Constitution. So if there is not anything, if the Constitution does not support the fact that you're being forced to wear a mask, then it's not valid. But what does that mean to a government that's off the rails, that doesn't care about your rights or the rule of law? All it means is that we need to understand our rights and stand up to it. Now, to wrap up here before we get into COVID, of course, I want you to be very aware that the Great Reset is something that Joe Biden and his team are adamantly involved in. I mean, big surprise. Their campaign tagline was Build Back Better. That's literally what they're talking about with the Great Reset. You can find Build Back Better quoted all around the world before all this started. So we're going to pretend like Biden didn't choose that because he's already invested in this globalist plan? Come on. I mean, how little do people need to pay attention if you do not believe that that is obvious? And then add to the fact that they're now telling you that. John Kerry says that the Great Reset will happen with greater speed, he says, that's a quote, and with greater intensity than a lot of people might imagine. Oh, great. So basically, it's not your choice. It'll happen around you whether you like it or not. There have been people who saw this is what was coming for many months. Yes, exactly. A lot of us have been pointing this out. It is reveals Biden's devotion to radical Great Reset movement. That's alarming. Now, just to wrap up, I want you to see how frustrating it is for people that recognize how disconnected executive orders are from any semblance of representative government. The Hill is just saying, just in, President Biden is set to sign 3 executive order actions about this, about climate change, including others directing the federal government to purchase electric vehicles and pause new oil and gas leases on public land. These are all kinds of stuff that he's just writing down, and there you go. And that is not how executive orders are supposed to work. They do not have the power to influence public policy for average people. Look this stuff up, guys. It has the power to influence spending for federal government. It has the power to influence the actions of government, but not the... This is incredible that we can say, yeah, let's just make you wear medical interventions. But as I said, and I'm making fun of the chant, this is what democracy looks like. And I just said, this is what democracy looks like. Wait a minute, right? We're all those people that were screaming, Biden, democracy, we're all going to say... And he steps in and does literally the opposite. The truth is, we have not lived under a democracy or a republic or any form of representative government for a long time now. What we should be saying is this is what democratators look like. Dictators pretending to be democracies. Democratators. Let's make that a thing. But keeping this in mind and recognizing how broken and corrupt these people are, we need to recognize the illusion that's happening in front of us. Now, understand, as I've always pointed out, the illusion doesn't necessarily have to mean that there's not things present, but that's certainly a possibility based on the big building of the evidence here. But add this to your growing list of what, you know, the information that we have at our disposal. This is somebody from the CDC in China, straight up stating with NBC, mainstream media, that nobody seemed to pick up on or even comment on under the video, which, by the way, I also have right here for you. And I'm going to play a clip from this. But stating that they didn't isolate the virus. Now, the reason this is so important is there's a couple of points here. Remember that when the process here is they're saying that China supposedly isolated the virus. That's the narrative from all sorts of discussions, or at least some of them. Then that material was sent, which was then, they claim, was re-isolated. Now, whether or not that happened seems irrelevant to the point that we know that Moderna and Pfizer were in the process of building and then testing a vaccine within days after that was sent to them. January 11th, I believe, was the date when it arrived. And then by January 14th, Moderna was already claiming that they had something done and that they were sending it off to begin trials. So if China's saying they didn't isolate it, and Moderna's saying specifically that they were already testing this thing 2 days later. Where did they step in to isolate this? Are we going to pretend they circled back and did it after they already made a vaccine? I mean, come on, guys. And by the way, we also know that UK, I think it's MHRA, admitted with the researcher we previously showed via email that this is based on a computer model, that they based this on a computer model, not an actual isolated piece of virus. That's what they said in their own emails. I mean, it's just incredible, don't you think, that we can be at this point? But there's always more to talk about. There's always more to discover. But when we have a person from the CDC, the point is, what's interesting is people will dismiss this because, well, he's from China, which I don't even know why. That's a very ignorant thing to say. China, is he a Chinese? You know, anyway, governments should be questioned. Chinese government, U.S. government, Russian government, any of them. They should be questioned because they're all trying to deceive you one way or another. But it doesn't mean that you should dismiss anything that you're staring at, especially with the all the evidence around this from before, such as the FDA and the CDC stating quite clearly they did not have qualified isolates. You build the big picture, adding this into it, and it begins to paint something quite clear, in my opinion. You tell me what you think.
In Beijing, huge lines for mass testing, and everywhere digital surveillance.
I need to scan to prove to the driver that I'm healthy, and that information also goes for contact tracing.
Now, one thing I want to point out here is that this is only a clip of the larger segment, but it's so obvious how they're not saying like, ooh, look at how violating this is of your rights. The NBC is clearly going, look, this is good, and we're working, and we're scanning everybody, and everything's being tracked. That's what's coming to you guys. It pains me that there's actually people out there arguing that I'm still crazy for arguing that what they're building in front of us is about to happen. The social credit, the vaccine passports, the QR codes, scanning on entries to buildings, that is what is coming to you. I mean, here's NBC's glowingly talking about it right in front of you.
Everywhere digital surveillance.
I need to scan to prove to the driver that I'm healthy, and that information also goes for contact tracing.
A World Health Organization team is in Wuhan to explore the origin of the virus.
There's been a lot of blame being put around about this pandemic. It originated somewhere.
Now, this person you may remember, here, let me get his name back up there for you, Peter Daszak. I found it absolutely absurd that Peter, who is the president of EcoHealth Alliance, who is the facilitator of the payments between the U.S. government and the Wuhan lab, is involved with the investigation of whether this started in Wuhan? Are you kidding me? All right? It's like having the suspected murderer investigate whether he's involved. That's incredible. But here he is. It says right there, World Health Organization investigative team. And you can see him right here in the previous clip getting off the bus. That's him right there. He is getting off to investigate this, and he is somebody who is very clearly fingered in where the process of how this developed. I mean, there's all sorts of points we bring up from North Carolina University with the material, from Fort Detrick in general, from the U.S. government and NIH with the material, from EcoHealth Alliance facilitating the payments back and forth. I mean, these are the people that should be the most scrutinized. And here he is going over, gee, I wonder what he's going to find. Of course, they're suddenly starting to float this narrative again. I mean, again, realize how crazy it is that let's say they find it and say, yes, it started here. That still just as much implicates the U.S. government. I believe the U.S. government and the Chinese government, if this is the way it worked out, absolutely did this together. I don't know why we would question that they would both play a role in this. It's very clear that they are going forward. But think about how incredible that is. I can't wait to find out what the results are, and then we'll bring this back up again and point out that this guy is somebody who should be scrutinized more than should be doing the scrutinizing.
Being put around about this pandemic. It originated somewhere.
The first cluster of cases traced to a market.
It still isn't clear whether the Huanan market was the source of the virus, though outside experts believe it was a starting point for the outbreak.
Yeah, that's completely not true. And it's so painful how these talking heads either aren't intelligent enough to look up everything other than what they're being told, or they just don't care, they just lie to you. But it's been fundamentally shown that is 100% not how this started. Multiple people have brought this up, as well as the point that this is clearly not where it began. How can you talk about this when you've got like 11 other countries claiming that they have very clear, verifiable evidence of COVID-19 present in 2019? Canada, Japan, I mean, Taiwan, Spain, I always forget, there's so many of them. I've done shows about each one. Canada, with China, continue to point out that they have proven frozen waste samples all the way back to 2013. Yes, they say it's a different, the earliest variant. But regardless, we're talking about something that's not just sudden. And as well as all these countries, as even the U.S. are now pointing out in regard to I think it was the WHO. I'm trying to make it in the U.S. government. Great. We just lost the feed again. Well, but so anyway, they've admitted multiple places in multiple countries around the world
that they have evidence this was starting in 2019 or present in 2019. And yet, they're sitting here telling you that we still think it started there, and here's what the evidence points to, despite that being quite the opposite.
Where Chinese officials took samples over a year ago.
And why has the data not been shared?
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
What about live animal samples?
It doesn't tell you anything. I do not suspect it's coming from what we originally thought.
I'm going to go ahead and play that one more time just in case anybody missed it, because I think it's very important that we hear and see what this person is saying. So let's play that one more time.
In Beijing, huge lines for mass testing, and everywhere digital surveillance.
I need to scan to
explore the origin of the virus.
There's been a lot of blame somewhere.
The first cluster of cases traced to a market.
It still isn't clear whether the Huanan market was the source of the virus, though outside experts believe it was a starting point for the outbreak.
Where Chinese officials took samples over a year ago.
And why has the data not been shared?
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
What about live animal samples?
It doesn't tell you anything. I do not suspect it's coming from what we originally thought.
Excuse me, my mic was off there. I'm just laughing about how the fact is that the moment that I try to replay that clip, every moment that the big part starts to be said, weirdly, the stream drops off and dies. Isn't that funny? But what the secondary part that he says right there is also very important, that he doesn't believe this started where they think it did or that it even came from the animals, and yet they're still pushing that idea. It's just, it's quite incredible that this is the continual, and that even the segment says the opposite. I mean, I find that to be insulting. But this will be included for you to check out for yourself. They didn't isolate the virus, right? I mean, it's something that is challenging the entire narrative, and it's being floated on NBC with no pushback whatsoever. I mean, that's just staggering to me. But let's jump over to the vaccine here. For those that are watching on the live stream here, we're dropping in and out, so hopefully you're back on now. So doctors around the world issue dire warning. Do not get the COVID vaccine. Now, here's what's interesting is a lot of these people right here in this picture are some of the ones that have been saying that it wasn't isolated, you know, and being attacked for it. Now, come to your own conclusions about that. Do the research, ask the questions, and ask yourself why somebody from the CDC would say it's not isolated. And ask yourself why all of these medical professionals with very clear degrees would argue that. All right? And there's people saying the opposite. Ask yourself why they would say the opposite. Do the research, look at it for yourself. I personally think you'll end up coming to a quite clear conclusion. But the reality is they're telling you, do not take this thing. It's dangerous. All of them. And this is just some of them. I mean, it's unreal. I continue to point out, I'm pretty sure there are far more medical professionals, doctors, scientists speaking out about why we shouldn't do this than we can see trotting out on CNN and NBC, MSNBC and Fox News and whatever else. I mean, really, think about it for a second. They are censoring more people than there are saying you should do this, because all they do is just kind of do the routines, the route. One person goes on each channel and it's all the same people coming back around again. But we seem to see a hell of a lot of people saying, maybe we should wait. That's okay. I'm going to play this. Let's see. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, for those that might have missed the clip because of the censorship that happened both times I tried to play that part, just catch it on the replay. I'm going to post it on everywhere else and it won't be cut up. YouTube will probably censor this the moment I'm done, like they always do anyway, because they're a bunch of pathetic cowards, but we'll keep going. Biden announced purchase of 200 million vaccine doses. Right. You know, the one that they're telling you don't do because it's dangerous, but he bought 200 million more. But wait a minute. Didn't they just tell us that there was this huge shortage and we didn't have enough? Oh, that's right. It's because they didn't buy enough. And Pfizer's been saying that they have them. So was that a false scarcity? Yes, it was. When they're pushing the idea that no, we just don't have enough. No, what was happening was nobody wanted it. And it alarmed them. They don't want, and this is the lying for their truth. I think, like we're saying before, they don't want to come out and say, well, nobody trusts this thing. They want to come out and go, well, let's lie about that and say, well, we don't have enough. Always incompetent instead of criminal. Now they're buying more. So that was that. That was the scarcity. Good job, guys. Way to get on the plan here. But here is some important stuff I want to share in regard to the vaccine. Another very important clip here about from a nurse. Now, there's a couple of these. By the way, there's been a lot of this going around. Nurses speaking out, you know, telling you what they're seeing. And of course, it gets attacked, as it always does. But at some point, we need to recognize that there's enough going on right now that makes this clear. That you should pay attention to what these people are trying to tell you. Now, this one is disconcerting. Now, I think I have to adjust this video, but listen to what he has to say, and we'll give you my comments afterward.
In Beijing, huge lines for mass testing.
Yep.
My patients. I know when they are happy. I know when they are sad. I know when they are frustrated. I know when they are feeling good. I know these people. I'm around them for 8 hours. And many people who are CNAs can testify of the same thing. We know the people that we care for. So, 2 weeks after these people received the vaccine, particularly the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine, 2 weeks after they received the vaccine, or 3 weeks later, I am seeing this pattern of not just side effects, to the point where we had people who were once walking who are no longer walking. People who were once talking who could no longer talk. People who were once able to think could no longer think. Delirium, confused. The expert says that the vaccine do not have the COVID-19 in it. I understand. Okay.
Now, at this point, I have another thing to come up. We'll talk about again. I'm starting to think a lot more about this. They keep screaming that this has, no, it's just not possible. It just can't get you sick. But we keep seeing it in Israel and a lot of the examples, one where we're going to show you today, where people get it and immediately get sick. So it's something to consider. I mean, I don't know why we would trust anything else that they're saying at this point.
It's supposed to be a stimulus, right? A stimulus that's supposed to help your immune system to fight against the virus if you were to confront it. That's the purpose of this vaccine, right? I understand that. I'm not anti-vaccine. I understand the purpose of it. That's not the point of what I'm trying to say. But this is what I'm saying, friends. Our residents are dying. Our residents are dying after they have taken this vaccine. And what troubles me, this is not even being spoken about. What bothers my heart is that it's almost like, don't talk about this. Just keep quiet. This. Let's go along with the notion. And I'm sitting here thinking like, this. First of all, I'm a Christian. I can't live with my conscience knowing this is what's happening in front of my eyes. Now, when you ask questions, when you ask those in authority, those in a position that could give you answers, this vaccine, right? I understand that. I'm not anti-vaccine. I understand the purpose of it. That's not the point of what I'm trying to say. But this is what I'm saying, friends. Our residents are dying. Our residents are dying after they have taken this vaccine. And what troubles me, this is not even being spoken about. What bothers my heart is that it's almost like, don't talk about this. Just keep quiet. Just questions. When you ask those in authority, those in a position that could give you answers, you know what their answers are? We had a super spreader. A super spreader? And the answer is, why are so many of our residents are getting infected with this COVID-19 after they took the virus, after they took the vaccine? Why are they getting infected? Why are they dying? You know what the answer that I'm getting, friends? Do you know what the answers I'm getting? Oh, we had a super spreader. So there was a person who was sick or a few people that were sick, and they spread it. Friends, let me tell you something. I'm not the smartest man in the world. And I'm also not the dumbest one either. I'm not the wisest man in the world, but I'm not stupid. How are you gonna tell family members? How are you gonna tell us? You go to the year of 2020, zero death, and I can speak the same for many, many nursing homes. Zero death. You go to the whole entire year. Let's see what has passed away. We are in 2021. We are in the middle of the month. Where I work right now, over 14 patients have already died. They are dropping like flies.
But we're all crazy, though. You know? I mean, the problem is that this is coming out left and right. And all they want to do is attack it because they've already been convinced that this is conspiracy theory. That's what's alarming about this. But, I mean, look, this is just one, that's just one man's perspective, right? He could be wrong. I happen to believe he's correct. But remember that just because he's saying it doesn't make it true. Just because you already think it might be true doesn't mean that it's accurate. But what he is saying is being confirmed by a lot of other nurses, by a lot of other actual real-world examples. I mean, the best one that I think of, the best worst one, is that he's saying that before, and I believe he's talking about deaths, not like natural causes, but deaths from, you know, treatment or actions, was zero. But yet they're seeing deaths, 14 in this first month after these vaccinations, as well as people getting sick, as he's saying. That it's crazy. And all that can happen is, and look, I'm not arguing that I know as a matter of fact what's happening. All I'm saying is that there's obviously information that's being withheld from us. And that makes me alarmed. And I think that that's more than enough reason to be cautious about this, if not completely avoid it, like your life depended on it. And all they're going to do is attack you for asking questions about what we are being told we have to enforce and inject into our body. But here's what somebody has to say about it. This is in regard to this video. He says there are actually known side effects. These are actually known side effects. Right, so good, this random account with 698 followers. Good, glad for, thanks for informing us. I was just watching a video yesterday that said these type of side effects are expected about 2%. Right, so who knows what it was, where it was. The point is, even if what he's saying is correct, to argue that this is just normal, just because you want to arbitrarily deem these horrible things normal doesn't make it actually normal. This is not how we see these things normally operate with previous vaccines or any kind of treatment. This is exponential, as Burns has been pointing out. This is 50 times 80% higher than what we get from the flu. The vaccine, I should say. But he said it affects elderly more than other age groups. So then why did we start with elderly people? It was estimated 67 million people worldwide might be affected by these symptoms. By what symptoms? Death? I mean, so if you're really arguing that 67 million people might be dying and that's okay with you because they told us that would be normal, I don't know what to say to you. But as she points out, known side effects, drop like flies, really? But just, this is the kind of cognitive dissonance we're up against. They go into auto drive, and they just kind of go, well, this is normal because that's what the news said. But this is not normal. A good friend of mine told me 2 weeks ago that all the people in the care home where she worked had been given the vaccine. I asked her to let me know if any of them had adverse effects. She told me that 11 of them had died. But they were all old, though, right? So we don't know for sure. That's at least what we're getting from the media. Another one, my mom-in-law received her first injection of a local care home in UK after 10 months of no cases at home after receiving vaccinations, got riddled with COVID. Now, this is actually the same case I believe I'm going to talk about today. It's all over the place. Before I even get there, though, I want to point something out that somebody shared with me that I find to be very relevant. First of all, recognize this on the Wayback Machine. This is from the CDC.gov. But if you try to look it up by their URL right now, this is what you get. I wonder why they would remove this from their website. I'll let you be the deciding factor on why they might have done that. Updated guidance for documenting vaccine national drug codes and lot numbers in the Immunization Information System, the IIS, and EHR, which is Electronic Health Record. Okay, so understand what this is talking about. updated guidance, so it's not new, it's been around, and they're updating the guidance for documenting the codes of vaccines, not only in the immunization information system, but also in an electronic health record system. So it's not only the vaccine's code, but also its lot number of every single vaccine administered. Okay, so you understand it. It says right here, immunization provider guidance for recording NDC, which I believe, where was it, right? For all NDC, right here. National drug codes. Again, it's right in the title. Okay, so it's saying immunization provider guidance for recording the national drug codes of these vaccines. It says when recording that code for an administered vaccine, which means this is what they do with every vaccine, a provider may capture that code on the UOU or the UOS, depending on the established critical workflow. But here's the point. This information should be transmitted or reported. Not sure why this won't zoom in for me. I was trying to zoom in. There you go. This information should be transmitted or reported, messaged to the immunization information system. Okay, so the point I'm trying to show you here is this document that suddenly is no longer on the website for some very alarming and weird and suspect reason is saying that they, for a long time, at least since 2017 or before when this is because it's updated, are recording every single national drug code of the vaccines given and the lot number they come from in both the immunization information system and the electronic health record system. So when they're talking today about Moderna going, we don't know where it came from or how many went in arms and what blah, 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 or the acting like the Vayer system is the only way we can actually confirm whether or not these people are having effects from these things or what they got and when and how and blah, 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 is a lie. They know who got what, when they got it, and what they're actually doing. This is recorded. So when they continue to pretend like we don't really know this information, or we have to flesh it out or go by a reporting system, they're lying to you. Which is probably why this is no longer there. Interesting. But on this point, I want to recognize a couple of interesting things that The Guardian is saying. Morning Mail, vaccine age limits. Right, as only now, right, after they've already rushed this thing out to 14 million people plus, now they're going, well, maybe we shouldn't give it to the elderly people that are dropping like flies. You mean exactly like we were screaming about back then and called conspiracy theorists and censored for? Yet again? Yes, just like that. German authorities have advised the Oxford AstraZeneca jab that should not be given to people over 65. By the way, all of them are like this. Only some of them are, I mean, Norway is pretty much saying nobody over 65 should be taking this thing. But, you know, our country doesn't care. We're giving it to them first because we care about them. And guess what it says? They should not be given those over 65, citing a lack of data. They can't even be honest with that. So let's be clear about what they just said. If they're citing a lack of data, that means that they don't have the data to argue that it should be given to people over 65, yet they were doing it thus far. So they only waited until 14 million people got vaccinated to come out and go, well, we don't have any data, so now we'll pull back. Anybody? Really, what the point is they're saying a lack of data because lots of data is coming out showing that people over 65 are dying and having crazy effects. And so they're claiming, well, now we're clearly recognizing that we didn't do enough research and we're pulling back. So you can say just lack of data, but that clearly insinuates that they weren't willing to do it to the beginning without it. This is so incredibly off the rails in every possible way. This is not being guided by science, just like we see the UK saying, yeah, let's mix and match vaccines and use half batches and blah, 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 as their own scientists are saying, that's crazy. And they do it anyway. With Australia relying on the AstraZeneca vaccine for the bulk of its doses, the country's vaccine advisory body said it was too early to say whether they'll put an age limit on who receives it. Okay, so German authorities are advising not to take it over 65, but the vaccine company's going, well, we're going to give it to people over 65. It's too early to know. Who cares about all the deaths and problems? The UK maintains the vaccine produces a good immune response in all ages. Oh, then good. Then who cares? Now, the biotechnology company set to manufacture 50 million COVID-19 vaccines in Australia, CSL, was a no-show at a parliamentary inquiry yesterday. it makes me think about that image of a Rockefeller poking a royal member of the royal family member on the chest, saying like, you know, if you could poke somebody like this on the chest, think about the power you have. And this is the idea. Recognize the kind of these vaccine companies and whoever's involved with this agenda are clearly above the people that think they're in control of our legal system. If you could just not show up to a parliamentary inquiry saying that you're just too busy, who has the power here? That's literally what they said. They're just too busy to explain their role. Sorry, guys. In their $1.7 billion supply deal from that same parliament. But yeah, but sorry, guys, we'll just give you the brush off because you're not important enough. We're too busy. Senator Rex Patrick to accuse of it behaving improperly, or he accused them of behaving improperly by not submitting to scrutiny. And then that's it, apparently. They'll just keep going. Let them scorn you or spurn you. It's just apparent who is really in control. The inquiry has also warned the government might not meet its target of 4 million vaccinations by the end of March due to supply disruptions. Oh, yeah. Keep pushing that lie. Clearly, if you wanted them, they would be here by now. The point is, I mean, if they were making this 2 days after January 11th, in regard to Moderna specifically, but the point is they're sure we would be well beyond this. But the point is no one's taking them, which is actually what the reality, when you dig in further, you find out. But representatives from Pfizer and AstraZeneca told the committee that, in fact, they were on track to deliver the first shots by late next month. So were they on track or are they having issues with disruptions? Okay, so the government is telling you they're due to supply disruptions, but Pfizer's saying we're on track. We'll deliver them next month. Oops. Liberal MP Andrew Lamming has suggested overhauling hotel quarantine with resort stays. I love that. Hotel quarantine. So your prison, what they call a hotel resort. But medical experts say it's too early to know if the vaccines will allow measures to be eased. Right. The vaccine that doesn't have any of the effects that they will arguably say will allow you to go back to normal. Right. So now you're completely contingent on freedom. Vaccine meaning freedom. They're building this narrative and this perception that vaccines equal freedom. And they're going to use that to push the vaccine passport. They announced the Transman travel bubble pause would be extended until Sunday after New Zealand recorded two additional cases. Oh no, of the variant linked to this one hotel in Auckland where it's suspected of highly infectious South African strain, but is not, in fact. Now, all the evidence shows that it's more than likely not, and even the WHO was just asked about this today, and you know what they said? Well, there's a lot of strains and they're usually are not dangerous, but we don't know if this one is or not, but we should be cautious about it. So that is being used to say it might be more dangerous. Yeah, it might be. It also might not be. They didn't say one way or the other. They said they needed more research, but Boris Johnson is using it to scare people as if it might be more dangerous. The US is using it to scare people as if it might be more dangerous, despite the fact that groups like NerveTag literally found that it didn't have enough evidence to suggest it was more dangerous. And Neil Ferguson said it was. And so they went with that anyway. That's all true. This is the reality, but it's not based on facts. It never has been. If you're over 65, you should stay the hell away from this. If you're alive, you should stay the hell away from this. Here is somebody from Italy pointing out in a paper writing about it, there were no cases ever in the very well-isolated retirement home they're pointing to. They took the vaccines, first dose, on January 13th. Now 13 cases, just like that. I mean, it's another example. There could be some kind of explanation. It could just be a random thing, or it could be like what you think it is. Or it could be, just like with Israel, that something caused this. I don't know why. This needs to be a question we start asking. Now, here's an interesting point. Merck has actually stopped their COVID vaccine. They just scrapped it. They're not going to play this anymore. Why? They're saying it's more effective to get the virus and recover. Not a joke. Vaccine manufacturer Merck has abandoned its development of two coronavirus vaccines, saying that after extensive research, it was concluded that the shots offered less protection than just contracting the virus itself and developing antibodies, which is how this article is framing it. But it's correct. But here's what it actually says. Here's the actual Merck discontinues development of SARS-CoV-2 COVID-19 vaccine candidates. Now it says, I had this highlighted earlier. I don't know why it is anymore. We're grateful to our collaborators who worked with us on these vaccine candidates and to the volunteers. We are resolute in our commitment to contribute due to the discontinuation. Shoot, I had it highlighted earlier. That is what it says. I just want to give you the full picture. I hate that these things refresh on me. Right. Okay. So it says phase 1 clinical studies for the vaccine. In these studies, both their two different kinds were generally well tolerated, but the immune responses were inferior to those seen following natural infection and those reported for other vaccines, right? So it's, if I were this article, I would include that second part because it does seem a little bit disingenuous to not include that they also said the vaccines, but they're clearly saying what that article said. Natural infection, meaning your immunity from getting the virus is more effective than Merck's vaccine. Not necessarily other vaccines. They literally said the other ones were. So that's why I find that a little disingenuous, but nonetheless, it's incredible to see that they're telling us that the just getting sick is actually better than their vaccine. It's all there for you to look at. But this is exactly why we're seeing them actually bribe people to get this thing, because nobody wants it. The murky ethics of paying people to get the vaccine, facing sluggish demand, especially among healthcare workers for Pfizer and Moderna's experimental vaccines, employers float a variety of incentives that some say border on coercion. Yeah. The 14 million adults vaccinated thus far are significantly short of Operation Warp Speed's goal of administering 20 million shots by the end of 2020. Show us that people are not, I mean, well, it's, we're talking about 6 million difference, 14 million. I mean, they wanted most of the country. They wanted 70%. Scott Gottlieb, remember the former FDA commissioner who passed through the revolving door to join Pfizer's board of directors in 2019, predicts that demand for the shots will become soft after just a third of the U.S. population accepted the jab. Don't you love this? This is a guy who was on the FDA, who's supposed to be holding accountable these groups, and now he jumps over and works on their board. This is how broken the system is. They have connections. They work back and forth. That's what it's always about. They abuse the system and they tell them, wait, if you pass this or you allow this, we'll have a cushy job waiting for you when you leave. Now, it says many Americans' interest in the COVID-19 vaccination is tepid at best. This is particularly the case among the healthcare and nursing home workers being asked to take the risk of rolling up their sleeves. Upwards of 70% in some cases I've seen. Many are refusing the shots, taking pains to explain that they're not anti-vaxxers, but object to being guinea pigs. You see, a nuance, a differentiation that the media is refusing to acknowledge. People that are, in some cases, believe strongly in vaccines, but nonetheless are still very alarmed about what this is. That whole, the fact that people like that exist completely shatters their narrative. That's why they refuse to show you. Because if you can be totally pro-vax, but still scared of the vaccine, it shows you that there's more going on here. But up to 60% of vaccine-eligible frontline health workers, in a broad sense, are declining the as-of-yet unlicensed mRNA vaccine. Now, it says in Nazareth, Pennsylvania, this is about how they're bribing people. This nursing home is offering employees who take the jab a one-time payment of $750. Guess what, though? Using money they got through the CARES Act to do so. So now that money that was supposed to be about helping the economy and the people that don't have jobs, they're using that money to pay you to get vaccinated. Who didn't see that coming? In Texas, the 26,000 employee Houston Methodist Hospital System is offering a $500 bonus. They call it a hope bonus to workers who accept the COVID vaccine. I'm sure it'll be really hopeful until they start having Bell's palsy and seizures and possibly die. But the hospital expects to eventually make the injection mandatory for employees. So you see where it's going? This is what they're going to do is make it out to, they're going to float the idea, well, we're probably going to make it mandatory, so you might as well take the money now. This is gross coercion. They're manipulating people. People right now that can barely feed their families. This is gross. A Wisconsin nursing home is providing a $150, by the way, before I even go forward, remember, this is while we're seeing things dramatically fall right now, which is ridiculous because as even JP's pointing out, everyone's going, whoa, you know, the thing, suddenly everything is going down because Biden's, you know, it's not, they want you to take it as a two-party thing, but it's not. But they're pointing out how these things are actually, like, for instance, he pointed out in the show, Gavin Newsom is reopening things, except the hospital capacity is higher than when he started it. And his argument was what was contingent for everything. We were basing it on the hotel, on the hospital capacity. So why did he stop it now? Is he admitting that he was wrong when he began? No, he's not. So because of higher hospital capacity, Newsom is now removing the restrictions. Does that make sense to anybody? It makes sense when you're trying to paint a picture, when it's politics, when you're a manipulator. I think Governor Lee did the same thing. He's now releasing all these things, yet apparently the things are, deaths are higher than they were before. But the cases are lower. Why? Because they're not testing as much. It's all a gamed illusion. The whole damn thing. We can see clearly that this is, I mean, what they were only skyrocketing because of the PCR test and because of the false positives and because of the blending of pneumonia and influenza, all these things which are just painfully obvious. And now they're slowly rolling it back. That's what's happening. A Wisconsin nursing home is now providing a 150. Oh, the point was they're pushing this stuff as an argument that, well, we're going to bribe you because it's just so important. We're all in so much danger that we have to, but we're not though. In every sense of the word, it's not even there. Regardless of the actual, even their narrative numbers are going down. On top of that, the CDC tells you that if you're under 50, you're basically in no danger. But we're just going to keep screaming that you're in danger because they said 3.4 9 months ago. And we're going to bribe you under that. Wisconsin Nursing Home is providing a $150 bonus to staff who complete both doses, amounting to about, I don't know, 8 hours pay for most workers. Atlanta's AG Rhodes, a new long-term healthcare company, is offering raffle prizes, TV sets, paid time off, and paycheck bonuses worth up to $500 to staff who get vaccinated. You know, crumbs and pennies, as long as you get what the elitist wants you to. Nursing homes in Maine are exploring strategies such as bonuses or time off to get vaccinated, but also very non-monetary tactics such as peer pressure as fruitful. Eager to jump on, remember on Event 201, this was a huge part of this. Peer pressure, manipulation. And by the way, all of their documentation, such as lockstep, by the way, not that there's the same thing as to Event 201, but just they as in the hierarchy enslaving you, eager to jump on the feel-good bandwagon and promote the importance of vaccination, the National Football League offered free Super Bowl tickets and game day experiences, that's a quote, whatever that means, to 7,500 healthcare workers as long as they've received both doses. So now you're going to get, like, they're going to rush in and go, I got it, give me tickets. Oh, sorry, we already gave them all out. It's just about coercing you into getting this thing for monetary benefit. That's, I mean, it's wrong, especially when you know the dangers here. In commerce, the global grocery chain Aldi plans to give hourly workers just 2 hours of paid time off per dose of the vaccine. How nice of them. Pennies. Ensuring that all hourly workers who wish to receive the vaccine are able to do so without concern about losing pay. So basically, you're not doing anything. You're just pay as if they were at work. Trader Joe's, owned by the heirs of Aldi's founders, is making the same offer, as is Dollar General, which should give employees a one-time payment equivalent to 4 hours to go get vaccinated. Instacart. I mean, isn't it stupid that we're arguing that this thing is the most dangerous thing ever and this is the best thing that's ever happened? The most advanced technologically vaccine adventure, blah, blah, blah. I mean, nobody wants it. So we're going to bribe people and coerce them, because that totally lines up with how dangerous this is. Instacart, the online grocery platform, has announced a $25 COVID-19 vaccine support stipend for in-store team members and the company's shoppers, individuals who would get paid to shop and deliver groceries. Here's the one of the, I think this is the one. Former presidential hopefuls John Delaney and Andrew Yang endorsed the idea of paying $1,500 to any American who provides proof of vaccination. You see, now you're basically aligning the idea, like you want people to be able to carry with them and prove they're vaccinated. So you're basically funding the idea of wanting to keep that with you to be able to prove it. Meanwhile, Brookings Institute's fellow Robert Lighton is advocating for a $1,000 tax-free payment, although the latter cleverly proposes delaying most 80% of the payments to vaccinated individuals until the nation achieves its desired level of vaccine coverage, meaning never, right? Which is very clear. It's not going to happen unless they force us to. So that's the point. So you'll never get paid for that. So it's another manipulation, even of the money they're offering to you for this thing. Just gross people. Bioethicist Julian Savulescu of the UK's Oxford Centre for Practical Ethics benignly proposes a payment in kind model rather than cash, arguing that greater freedom to travel, opportunity to work or socialize, and the freedom to not wear a mask in public places and not to social distance would represent attractive benefits for the vaccinated. Except, again, these people are either too ignorant about what's really going on to realize that, one, they're all telling you have to wear a mask anyway, and two, that it does not stop transmission. So what in the world is this guy talking about? They're just trying to manipulate you. But of course, this guy is a bioethicist. Please recognize this guy is not who you should be talking to if that is what he is saying, because recognize that that fundamentally contradicts the actual document about bioethics from the United Nations that talks about the opposite of that, that you can absolutely be like, nope, don't want that, don't want any of it, but he doesn't care. Well, I guess different point, but Still makes sense. Now he says they seem only too happy to let the private sector set the tone for vaccine coercion, with monetary incentives representing the first less threatening step. Because that's the point. It'll transition into you have to do it now. Several developments in December suggest the situation will indeed get worse. Openness to the idea of mandates for vaccines, including are basically the all the talk right now of all these big companies, Walmart, Goldman Sachs, eBay, American Airlines, MetLife, Pizza Hut, they're all openly talking about mandating vaccines to be able to work there. Almost 3/4, 72% of CEOs endorse the idea of mandates sometime down the road. This is fake news conspiracy theory though, right, guys? Think about how crazy that is. We are right now being called crazy conspiracy theorists for arguing that there's even a discussion about forcing vaccines. Well, those same people then go around and argue the merits of making sure we all get vaccinated, even if we have to force people. Now, public health officials definitely appear to be caught off guard by the extent of the COVID-19 vaccine refusal, specifically among healthcare workers. I thought that they probably thought that they had them snowed. Now, weighing the risks and benefits, an activity in which all healthcare workers, all people, should be allowed to engage. A pregnant nurse who declined the mRNA injection told the Los Angeles Times that she was, quote, this is important, choosing the risk of COVID observed over many months of caring for COVID patients over, quote, the risk of the unknown of the vaccine, meaning that she watched the severity, not about how CNN told us they were talking about it, but she literally watched them and dealt with them. And she feels that's not alarming enough to in contrast to the complete unknowns about the vaccine. That one shows you how less severe it really actually is in the real world. And two, that the unknowns of the vaccine are actually a really big deal. Dr. Peter Hotez, who initially expressed caution about coronavirus vaccines, but now has become one of the injection's most reliable cheerleaders, I argue that's probably totally orchestrated, has inadvertently identified the real problem. The obsession with vaccines as a sole solution. This is important. Hotez recently admitted, quote, We put all our eggs in the biotechnology basket. We are not relying exclusively on vaccines. Geez, I don't know. Can I not read today? We are now relying exclusively on vaccines to control this. And this is an important point that we're going to get into next. They have stated more than I can count that they, with past experiments of about why we need to deal with specific things, such as bacterial pneumonia or pneumonia in general, as a focal point, not a secondary situation, right? I'll show you next, actually. But the point is, they didn't do that, despite their past discussions, even Anthony Fauci. What they did is clearly, as he's telling you, put all of our eggs in one basket, specifically vaccines. Specifically, biomanipulative, genetically modified vaccines that have never been tried before or never been successfully done before. And says, as even more significant problems as the doublethink message that is now equating vaccination with freedom. We're now exclusively relying on vaccines to control this, which, again, they know is the absolute worst thing they can do. Now, this is, I've pointed to this before, but I'm going to go in a little deeper today. From 2009, here's Anthony Fauci involved right there. Predominant role of bacterial pneumonia as a cause of death in pandemic influenza. Implications for pandemic influenza preparedness. Now, that's an important part because that's what they're saying. We know now that this is a focal point, and if we don't do this, right? And they didn't do that this time. Why? Because I argue they wanted to use what they found out here to manipulate you. They wanted to use the obvious tie-in with the side effects of other illnesses, such as bacterial pneumonia, to supplement or supplant, to basically make it the bigger picture, to make it appear as if it's all COVID-19. I truly see this right now. This is what I believe. I hope you'll come to your own conclusions about it and do the research. But we'll go through this right now, the parts that I find to be most important. Now, what this is talking about is 1918, the Kansas flu, as it should be known, as is very clear on Wikipedia and everywhere else, that it started in the United States and General Pershing and the U.S. military spread it around the world. Now, Spain happened to be the first country to speak out about it. And this is why at the time they were labeled as the Spanish flu. sort of the way it worked today, too. Isn't that funny? How China is the first one to point it out, but it clearly started there. At least it was seen plenty of other places. It could have still started there for all we know. Hasn't been shown yet. And it was blamed on Spain, saying they did a Spanish flu. But the reality is, just like we're seeing a lot of other places and today, that the U.S. military played a role here. But what they're saying is what they found out is that, in fact, bacterial pneumonia was the leading, not just the leading cause, but you'll find out as I go through this, virtually every single case died of bacterial pneumonia and not the flu. That's ridiculous. Because that an obvious conclusion would be that that was not what was happening then. Because you don't just say every single case had bacterial pneumonia, but it was the flu. Sure, there would be some secondary cases, but there'd also be secondary cases of any other number of things. But no, if virtually every case died from bacterial pneumonia, I think something else was happening. And we've talked about this in regard to the mass, and we'll get into that in a minute. But here's the points. Conclusions. The majority of deaths in the 1918-1919 influenza pandemic likely resulted directly from secondary bacterial pneumonia. Now, that's the conclusion of the authors. It says, if severe pandemic influenza is largely a problem of viral bacterial co-pathogenesis, pandemic planning needs to go beyond addressing the viral cause alone. All right, this is one of the main conclusions they found. So the whole time you should be asking, why didn't that happen this time? Prevention, diagnosis, prophylaxis, and treatment of specifically secondary bacterial pneumonia, or I argue in this case probably the leading, not secondary, but the issue, but that's part of the discussion differently. We're talking about in this case that their argument is we should have dealt specifically with the secondary part of whatever we're dealing with in a pandemic, and specifically bacterial pneumonia, because that is what they saw was the issue. That's how they could have stopped this, could have dealt with it better. Their finding was we should have done it this way. And they didn't do it this time, or the next time, or any time after they talked about this. As well as stockpiling of antibiotics and bacterial vaccines should also be on high priority for pandemic planning. None of which happened, by the way. Now it says in the results, although death certificates listing cardiac and other chronic causes of death increased in numbers during the time frame of the 1918-1919 pandemic, for all age groups, death was predominantly associated with pneumonia and related pulmonary complications. The increased fatality rate in the three high-risk age groups was predominantly due to the increased frequency of bronchopneumonia, not to increased incidence of influenza, or an increased bronchopneumonia case fatality rate. The examination of recut lung tissue sections from 1918 to 1919 influenza case material revealed, this is important, in virtually all cases, compelling histologic evidence of severe acute bacterial pneumonia. After autopsies, in virtually every case, they died of bacterial pneumonia. That's what they're saying, which I believe is quite clear that they're finding that this was actually the point. Virtually all cases? No, that's not how this works. I mean, even right now, the reason that pneumonia and influenza don't exist is because they're being blended in with COVID-19. But is virtually every case dying from one secondary thing or even any past flu pandemic? The point is there's always secondary things, and that's a totally legitimate conversation. But to say that virtually every one of them died from this, come on. There's obviously another factor here, and masks are definitely playing a factor today. We'll get into more as we go next, but realize that no, Fauci never said that masks caused it, but he clearly is saying that bacterial pneumonia was the leading cause, and even the study says virtually every case was bacterial pneumonia. Although the cause of influenza was disputed in 1918, there was, and this is interesting because even then they're arguing that it wasn't influenza, there was almost universal agreement among the experts that deaths were virtually never caused by the unidentified etiological agent itself, meaning flu, but resulted directly from severe secondary pneumonia caused by well-known bacterial pneumonopathogens that colonized the upper respiratory tract. Guess what kinds, guys? Streptococcus, and Staphylococcus. You remember why those are relevant? Because this is exactly the leading cause of what leads to bacterial pneumonia, which is not a surprise because that's what they're saying. But remember what we talked about in this video. Do masks cause bacterial pneumonia? I'm showing you the version of it that's on ice.media. Maybe hope you guys can go over there and check it out. But this is also on BitChute and wherever else. Probably not on YouTube anymore. But the point is, that we discuss this in this video, and I hope you'll take time to watch it because we go through every point. I mean, even Dr. James Lyon Weiler pointed out in our interview, it's a no-brainer that these masks are potentially leading to an increase in bacterial pneumonia. Going back to what we were talking about, remember that in that video, we talk about how what this is the process, right? That you, first of all, we know that mask mouth is a very real thing. And we've talked about this a lot because what this is showing you, mask mouth, it's all over the place now, is that you are creating a bacterial problem in your mouth. I mean, that what they're showing you is mask mouth is basically bad breath, rashes around your face, cracked teeth, all kinds of that's bacteria. That's what's happening. So what they're what the point is that in your mouth, one of the leading bacterial issues is streptococcus. Now, streptococcus in your mouth can become a problem with bacterial pneumonia if your mouth dries out and you breathe it back into your lungs. Do you know how that can happen? Wearing a mask. Look it up anywhere you want. Wearing a mask dramatically dries out your mouth, which causes the bacteria that's already present in your mouth to be pulled back into your lungs, which then very clearly causes bacterial pneumonia. Guys, this is a no-brainer. Can you think about how crazy it is that there are people saying we're absolutely out of our minds because this is fake news conspiracy theory when it's right in front of you? They just don't want you to think that masks are dangerous, but they very clearly have caused exactly the kind of issues that they're telling you they don't. As I point out every time I bring it up, this is the one that really matters because there's no other randomized controlled trials of cloth masks, which is what the vast majority of Americans are wearing because that's what the CDC tells them to. It says right in their conclusion of the only randomized controlled trial of cloth masks, it cautions against their use. It says very clearly, moisture retention, reuse of the mask, which everyone's doing, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. Exactly. Streptococcus being pulled back into your throat, being pulled back into your lungs, causing bacterial pneumonia. By the way, there's plenty of doctors out there screaming about a dramatic increase in bacterial pneumonia. Nobody wants to listen to them. It says right here, the rates of all infection outcomes were highest in the cloth mask arm. Guys, it's very clear. This is what it's called actually looking at the science. Back to this point, though. So we're talking about them pointing this out that virtually every case was caused by bacterial pneumonia, virtually never caused by the unidentified, which was the flu. That was the conclusion after the fact. It says, without this secondary bacterial pneumonia, experts generally believe that most patients would have recovered. Okay, so at what point can we start asking the logical question? The fact that everybody was wearing masks back then, in this regard, this was a big push, and they, at this time they were just, you know, what, fabric, way worse in regard to cloth. Exactly. I mean, everyone's wearing cloth. Exactly what will cause the most increase of infection. And we can't ask that obvious question. It says, surprising aspects of 1918-1919 influenza associated pneumonia fatalities. The frequency of pneumonia caused by both mixed pneumopathogens, particularly pneumococci and streptococcus, and by other mixed upper respiratory tract bacteria. I mean, I'm just, you know, someone's commenting it's very, very not clear. Like, how can this not be clear? Like, I don't understand what people are missing here. I'm not saying this is 100% the case. What I'm saying is to argue that this situation cannot possibly cause bacterial pneumonia is childish. I mean, it's literally unscientific and you can stare at the facts. It's a basic walk through the information to realize that this is what we're staring at. The possibility anyway. And as we're looking back at the same situation. But here's what this shows me right here. They're saying the frequency of pneumonia caused by both mixed pneumopathogens and by other mixed upper respiratory tract bacteria. Upper respiratory tract, this is the point. Now, it says in discussion, evidence suggests that the vast majority of influenza deaths resulted from secondary bacterial pneumonia. Virtually every one of them is what the study found. Compelling evidence for this conclusion includes the examination of 58 recut and restained autopsy specimens that showed changes fully consistent with classical descriptions of extensive bacterial pneumonia. It says the extraordinary severity of the 1918 pandemic remains unexplained. Gee, I wonder why that would be. That the causes of death included, this is important, that the causes of death included so many different bacteria, alone or in complex combinations, argues against against specific virulent bacterial clones. This is what I'm talking about. We know, I mean, look, we just talked about mask mouth, all these different things that are happening, right? Well, the point is, when you're creating this situation, any number of things could develop. So you're creating a perfect little petri dish around your face, which is the most dangerous part, to right there in front of your mouth. And then it's causing any number of things. One of the most obvious and logical is bacterial pneumonia, but there's plenty of other things. So when they're looking back and going, gee, we don't know why this got so severe, and it's not as clear cut as we thought it would be, where we can just find a bunch of flu, we're in fact finding many different types of bacteria, alone or complex combinations, all over the place. It sounds exactly like what we're talking about. It sounds like this was an issue that was caused by something other than what they told you it was. And when you add on the facts about what these things can cause and what they can do, it becomes at least a very relevant discussion to be had that is being actively attacked. Now, finally, it says, if the next pandemic is caused by a human-adapted virus similar to those recognized since 1918, we believe the infection is likely to behave as it has in the past pandemics. The present work leads us to conclude that in addition to these critical efforts, prevention, diagnosis, prophylaxis and treatment of bacterial pneumonia, as well as the stockpiling of antibiotics and bacterial vaccines, should be among the highest priorities in pandemic planning. So they found that what we should do is make sure, at the very least, that we have a program set up to deal with what they know will be a secondary issue, which is there's no denying that's happening today. You can disagree that it's happening because of masks, but it's happening. There's a huge increase in bacterial pneumonia. So why aren't they dealing with it? If the one thing, the most important thing they found in this was that they needed to come right out of the gate and deal with secondary bacterial pneumonia, why didn't they stockpile what they thought they should have? Why didn't they even talk about it? Why isn't it being discussed? Why aren't they treating people for it? You can argue that they know this and wanted it to hurt people so they could use it to blame it on COVID-19, or you can show that they're just so incredibly incompetent that they don't even remember what they found in a previous case. In any case, why are we listening to these people? Pretty clear. But I think it has a lot more to do with specifically what we're wearing around our faces. As you laugh at the reality of now, I mean, this is really ridiculous because I was just making this joke. Doctor tells NBC, Americans should consider wearing 4 face masks. Oh, well, why not 5? Isn't 6 better? Why not 13? This is stupid. Why not just never pull your head out? I mean, this is getting ridiculous until people just blindly take it. As Mitchell points out, Babylon Bee called it again, 90% effective. So look at this. So double masks are 75%. Where are they pulling this from? Who? God, no. Apparently a study from one person, one place, but who cares? Because let's not pretend that that's going to be a random controlled trial, that it's probably a computer model based on a rush study around people that are being funded for it. Instead of the 35 random controlled trials that all find that there's literally no statistical significant difference in reduction of transmission. Every one of them. But we'll point to this one study, which, by the way, is literally called cherry picking. But who cares? Double mask, 75%. Oh, but triple mask, well, that's 90%. So, I mean, come on. So like he says right here. So what they're saying is that masks don't work, but instead of just getting rid of them, they're going to keep doubling down until people just stop listening? Yeah, something like that. Or as he's saying, sorry, if triple's only 90, then why aren't they advocating 5? Right? I mean, if it's 90%, why not wear 4 then? Ah, well, that's where we are. Oh, well, then 4 then, obviously. Right? Like these people, it is insulting to our intelligence that this is actually what's being discussed. If the obvious argument would be, okay, if this mask is not new, the idea of this, they act like all these things are coming out new. No, the science has been quite clear about this. No science has ever settled, but the science has been pretty routinely consistent about what this does and what it doesn't do, right up until this started. Which is why almost everyone said, don't do that. And then suddenly they realized, well, we're supposed to say they should. But why didn't they tell you to wear 4 in the beginning? Why didn't they make quadruple thick masks? Because they knew it was better. I mean, are we really supposed to pretend like they're just feeling their way through this right now? Like, this is just pathetic. I cannot believe there are dumb enough people in this country to passively buy something as stupid as this. It is really that dumb to me. And the point is that the studies show you that they don't have any effect in general. It's statistically significant. That's exactly what the random controlled trials find. But on top of that, are we really going to pretend like they would just say that now we should double up? Four, why not eight tomorrow? Which is probably what's going to happen. I hope you'll take the time to watch this. Because this is very, a very, very real part of this. I am 100% convinced that the science, the evidence shows us beyond a shadow of a doubt that these things are adding to the risk of bacterial pneumonia at the very least. I leave it to you to look further. Here's an important video that I want you to watch. This guy's done a couple videos, but he's talking about cold weather, seeing as how we're in winter right now. I'll just let you listen to it and we can talk about it after. We're showing you, by, and we've already, by the way, the first thing he talks about, we already did a show on. The microfibers that absolutely, no matter what anybody says, come off these masks. Because it wasn't a secret before we got here. Before this started, it wasn't a secret. Now all these things that were basically completely discussed openly are now fake news. Because there's an agenda around it all. But he goes on to talk about how they become brittle when it gets cold, which increases how much comes off. And you know what? He proves it to you. But we're all conspiracy theorists, right?
Mass test number two, cold weather. If you haven't seen my last video, I go over how disposable polypropylene masks shed microplastics and the health risks associated with breathing in these microplastic dust particles, which include respiratory inflammation. It can be from your eyes, nose, mouth, throat, and lungs, and it can actually cause you to cough. Also, these microplastic dust particles are able to spread viruses better than water droplets. They can do so because, one, they weigh less, so they're able to travel further. Two, a virus can survive 24 times longer on a piece of plastic than it can in a water droplet. So that's 3 hours survival on a water droplet or 3 days on plastic. So let's take a look at thermal properties of polypropylene, or PP. So, polypropylene thermal properties. One of the last lines here that I was most concerned about is below 0 degrees Celsius, which is 32 Fahrenheit freezing temperature, PP becomes brittle. What? It's winter. Nobody wants their PP to be brittle. So, let's take a look. I got a nice pack here, holding my mask. It's pretty cold, so I'm going to try to do this quick. It doesn't warm up.
So the obvious point is, you know, brittle. Obviously, if it's brittle, it's not. It's not as. I mean, it's already. We know that the virus is too small. The holes in the mask are bigger than the virus. People want to say, oh, well, it carries on droplets, but that's not true. You can look up even their own research that shows that by and large, it spreads by aerosolized particulates, which, yes, are obviously too small to be stopped by this, the holes in these masks. But when they're brittle, it just simply makes it far, far more, far less effective, if at all effective in what we're talking about today. But the real point is that not only does it make it less effective, even under what they say it does, but it sheds a hell of a lot more. Real quick for Jonas in the chat, missing my presence on Twitter, make sure you check out, let me see where I had it, Ignitus. I'll find it, hold on. I just want to make sure he sees it, who is in the chat there. Where did I have my own, or his tweet? This is the account you should follow. It might as well be TLAF. It's almost like he's reading my mind and posting exactly what I'm thinking. All right, back to this.
Let's see how much this sheds at a cold temperature. I was at a ski mountain recently. It was 12 degrees out, and they were handing these things out for people to use for skiing.
So 12 degrees, right? I mean, the point is, it's just ridiculous how little actual requirements or, like, there's no regulation here at all. Like I said, people can put two strings on a piece of cloth and sell it at the gas station, and you wear that, and that's compliance. The government's okay with that, right? I mean, handing them out at this is the point, is they don't care. They know that this, I mean, if they're handing them out at the ski lodge and the company tells you that they don't, they're brittle after that, they're handing them out anyway because they're just complying. It's not actually safer for you. That's how a lot of this stuff is.
By the way, this is just a soft bristle brush, softer than your beard hair.
That's important, because the first thing I thought, I was like, well, that looks like a pretty thick, so he claims it's a soft brush. But just it's somebody in the chat saying contagion has never been proven. I never said it has. Right? I mean, if you're assuming that I am suggesting that these things are absolute fact, you're wrong. Because I'm not. I'm willing to consider all sides of the argument, even if I already think I have a conclusion, as you should too. Right? There's plenty of people out there that are saying, we know this hasn't been isolated, or we know that it has been, and you're wrong. Both of them are being ridiculous. I'm willing to hear out either sides of these arguments because it's always ongoing. Because I'm not an expert, and I continue to see information that seems to open up the conversation, right? We cannot assume that we know what we think we know because someone told us they're an expert. I have a lot of faith in a lot of the people that I've talked to and truly believe that they believe what they're saying. But you cannot be existing in this whole sphere today and taking one person's word for it. Not mine, not anybody. At this point, I still think it's up in the air. That may bother some people, but that is why you're here, guys. You can go run over to the channel down the road that's going to say, we know everything, listen to us. And they probably will be wrong a lot of time. We're all going to be wrong sometimes. But I make a promise to you every day that I am going to absolutely do everything in my power to rest everything we talk about on facts and science. True information. As best I can. And change that as new things develop, as an honest person should. Just to add that, since I brought it up, someone's talking about to show the video. I've showed stuff in the past about Koch's postulates. I went over this in the past. That's one of the most important ones in regard to the re-isolation and why I'm pretty sure that that hasn't happened. That's an important thing to hear. But again, is it possible that that's incorrect? Is it possible that I'm being deceived? Is it possible that I'm wrong? Yes, to all of that, which is why we should continue to find more to question everything. Star, thank you. Exactly.
Yeah. So last time I tested at 75 degrees room temperature, this mask has been frozen in the ice pack for about 10 minutes.
See, this is what happens when I engage with the chat on the show. No, see, this someone's saying that this is where I'm engaging in, what do you call it, relativism, where nothing... Come on, if you think that, then I don't... If you haven't been watching the show, but I think I recognize you, so I'm pretty sure you do. Clearly, that's not what I'm doing. To say that we don't know something is being honest. To say that both things could be possible because we're still finding information is called being honest and called being a real researcher. There's plenty of things that I've stated clearly to you guys that I think I know. So let's not pretend like one thing being honest with you because no one out there seems to be is me being relativism or, you know, playing the game or waffling. This is what happens today. Again, if you'd like to go have certainty, go down to the channel screaming certainty regardless of what happens every day.
I'm showing a dramatic increase in shedding.
Now, it goes on a little bit. I think that's the gist of it. I mean, he's just showing you quite clearly. I mean, I love how he's got this, you know, highlighted I know what those are called. It, you know, it magnifies the video. There's a term for it. But
so when you wear this mask, it shifts around. It's going to get rubbed on. Your hair is going to touch it. And these are going to fall off. And you're going to be breathing these in. Now, I don't know if you could see it right about here. This particle is moving around. Yeah, it's got some static cling to it. So can this cling to you after it, you know, gets expelled from a mask? Has a couple of virus particles on it?
Certainly possible. I would argue that his brushing and motion is what's causing the static. But in any case, the point is that it's obviously shedding. And far, far more because he had it on ice, so it's cold. So imagine you're out in 12 degrees skiing and wearing that flipping mask. And that's normal shedding from these masks. microplastics and particles. That's very clear. This is exponentially more because of the where this is. And still, I mean, even where I am, it's damn cold out here, snowing. So people are wearing these things in the cold, breathing in and out, and it's causing these things to break and shed. And then they're causing moisture retention, and it's even worse. I mean, everything about this, everything about it. Right? There's far more around the discussion of this or the isolation discussion. Right. If you want more information about that, for anybody asking in the chat, specifically, you know what you are. I've made 100 videos on this stuff. Go check it out. This is important. We need to be able to see that this is very clear. This is obvious. Why is it that something like this? I mean, and feel free to confirm this. I mean, I don't need. I've already seen the science around how these things shed in a normal sense. Could this be fake? Wrong? Of course it could. Anything could. But the point is that the science shows quite clearly that this is how this works. And the documentation from the own mask company says that happens. Why is this not being taken into consideration? It's not about health. It's about compliance. As Jay points out, this is the full face shield respirator that I wear when I'm sculpting stone. It's the best one he's ever had. Stone dust still gets through and or around the edges. But I'm sure your cloth mask will stop viruses, right? It's incredible. You know, that sock or t-shirt or bandana you got tied around your face. That's doing the job. It's just crazy. And as somebody shared, I think this is just ridiculous. So smoke, for those on the podcast, I guess it's impossible to explain in the podcast, but it's basically the meme showing a variation of different things and increasing of severity, smoke, painting, mining, pesticides, radioactive, and then the deadliest virus in history with a little plastic on your face. This seems like an appropriate time to again state, you know, the virus that's so, so incredibly deadly that you have to be tested to know you have it. Clearly, there's something off about what's going on. Now, I might skip over some of these because I forgot to add some of these videos in here, but I will include as this thing's buffering all day long. Please make sure that if you're watching now, you go check this out on BitChute and Odyssey because they're clearly afraid of us on YouTube, which they'll probably censor immediately. But this is some video about lockdowns, which is this is some alarming stuff. Actually, I'll see if they're loud enough and I'll try and play it for you. So this says that UK, every move is controlled now. You are literally a muzzled slave, all to save your life, they say. Whilst political persons, media, sports stars, high profile bus people are exempt from any travel restrictions and continually break their own rules.
The rules are clear. People should be staying at home unless they have a valid reason to leave. Going on holiday is not a valid reason. So we will introduce a new requirement so that people wishing to travel must first make a declaration as to why they need to travel. This reason for travel will be checked by carriers prior to departure. And this approach, Madam Deputy Speaker, effectively mirrors the checks on arrivals that are already in place with the passenger locator form.
Now, think back to the video we just saw of China, right? Of the biometric scans and the checks and the controls. These are people that actively attack and accuse China of being what they are, an authoritarian government that's very scary, as they try to emulate it in every single way.
Secondly, working with policing partners, we will increase police presence at ports and at airports, fining those in breach of the stay-at-home regulations. Anyone who does not have a valid reason for travel will be directed to return home, or they will face a fine. Third, we will urgently review the list of travel exemptions made to make sure that only the most important and with exceptional reasons are included.
Now remember that this is all being stated in light of everything we just showed you. In light of how what we're really dealing with right now. In light of the fact that it basically affects people that are over 70 and pretty much in nursing homes. Anything else, you're pretty much this is what is happening despite what we now know. That does not make sense. Unless all you do is scream about how more people died yesterday because apparently we think no one dies unless COVID anymore. And do not take it in context and fearmonger from because the media told you to.
These are crucial new measures to protect us all, but also to complement the robust action we have consistently taken at the border. And while these new measures are being operationalized, I would just like to remind anyone seeking to enter our country to comply with the rules. This includes providing evidence of a negative COVID test before entering the United Kingdom, self-isolation on arrival for 10 days, and the completion of the passenger locator form.
So you have to isolate it whether or not you're sick when you come in the country, and you have to basically allow yourself to be tracked. There's freedom. Freedom, right? Because this is the West, right? It's all the West countries fighting for freedom around the world, apparently. Well, conservative MP calls for literally GPS tracking of Brits to ensure COVID compliance. When we stated this would happen 6 months ago, 8 months ago, we were called crazy conspiracy theorists. At every step of the way, we have told you what was going to happen next, and every step of the way it has happened, and every step of the way we have been said you're crazy. Even once it happens, they look back and go, ah, you crazy conspiracy theorist. It's only justified now. But didn't you say we were crazy for saying it would happen? Yeah. But now we're crazy for saying that it happened because of what we said it would happen. It's just ridiculous. You are being tracked and controlled and surveilled, and everything is going in the direction that they're orchestrating until you stand up and stop it. Like being in a prison. The grim reality of what you can expect from a stay in hotel quarantine. This is not a joke, guys. This is camps. People are being put in prison camps because they're not doing what they're told. Not because they're sick, because they're not doing what they're told. Britain is the latest country to introduce quarantine periods in hotels for those arriving from abroad, as well as people that are being, you know, violating rules as well. That's what it looks like. It's incredible. This is a boy on his way home from work being harassed by police.
Don't worry about that.
What do you mean, don't worry about it?
Huh?
We're here to enforce legislation, mate, so I need to know who you are.
Yeah, you don't need to know who I am.
You know,
I haven't committed an offence, mate.
Pardon?
Haven't committed an offence.
How do I know that you live round here?
How do you know that these people don't live round here?
Well, that's my job, isn't it?
Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm interested in you.
You want to?
Right. So he gets to profile him. Ah, okay, so suddenly that's okay again. How funny. So he gets to say, we don't like the way you look, so we're going to stop you for no reason. He literally just said that, because danger.
Anybody come on?
Yeah, if you want me to.
Go on,
but we'll be dealing with this in a different manner now.
All right.
Okay. Right.
We're
in a virus legislation.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, let's all make sure we recognize that they are in the car right next to each other without wearing their masks. But we're in danger, right? So they can do it and they can be next to each other. But everyone, oh, but they have tests and they've got a vaccine. Doesn't matter. They're telling everybody that they have to do it anyway, whether or not they're tested or vaccinated. And they're doing it right next to each other. But he gets out, puts his mask on, and hassles this guy for being alone without it.
Pardon? Right, so I'm interested in you at the moment, okay?
Yeah.
So if you fail to provide me some details...
And he's already touched it twice, which means he should have gotten the new one by now, which we know nobody does, because it's not about health.
You're going to be arrested, mate.
Oh, back up from
okay?
The
so,
oh,
you...
Back up
no, you're refusing your details.
Well, I'm refusing the details.
Yes.
Look how close you're getting, Robin.
Refusing his details. It's clear he hasn't committed a crime. He said, no, we just want to see if you live around here.
You're going to get locked up in a bit, mate.
I'm going to get locked up for what?
So you're going to be...
Just pulled up on me.
Yes.
Asked me for my
name.
Yes. Yeah? I live round here.
Yes.
What's to say these other people...
I don't know you live round here.
Yeah. What's to say
and you're
these
arguing.
Other people...
You're arguing with
I know
us.
I'm arguing.
Okay.
So you're not allowed to argue with police anymore? Are police never wrong? Are you not allowed to argue for your own rights? We live in a fascist it's a dictatorship, guys. That's what this is. There is no actual freedom that's happening right here. You are at the mercy of power everywhere.
Say the same
so that,
to these
that gives
people.
Me reasonable suspicion that you're telling me
no,
lies.
No, it's not. You're obviously just harassing me.
No, I'm not harassing you. It's the first time I've met
you. I've got a hoodie on, I've got a coat on. Yeah, yeah. I'm on my way to work.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a normal citizen.
Yeah. So you've got no problem with providing details.
Well, why would I allow someone to just pull me over?
We're the police. We're not just someone, you idiot.
Huh?
Wow. 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 Right. So what he just said, too, first of all, after, you know, before insulting the guy, was that they are above the law, right? We have to understand, so we're clear about this, that the laws apply to everybody, which they love to say when it suits their agenda. As a police officer, you're still bound by the law. So he's saying, no, 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 because I'm an officer, I can do that, but you can't. Anybody else can, but I can. No, you can't. You need to have a log. You need to have a reason to pull them over, which we talk about all the damn time.
So just because you're the police, that gives you the right to stop anyone you want and get their details.
Because we're
you need to be reinforced.
Listen to what he says. So that's it. He wasn't breaking laws, but because he dared to press his opinion, speak his mind, respect his authority, right? That's it. It's over. The point is, what he was going to say is because of the, they're enforcing the legislation. It's about COVID-19. That's what it is. They think because they've got illegal mandates that they can enforce things such as we get to ask you whenever we want. Papers, please. That's what this is. Papers, please. You don't want to tell us who you are? Well, you're going to jail. This is what it looks like in a fascist state.
What? Sit in there. Sit in there. Right, we'll sort this out of the station then.
Why?
Okay, so you're going to be late to work.
What? Ah, great, and now he's going to probably lose his job. And they don't care, right? Who cares? Everyone, they're all they want is everybody out of work and everybody dependent on the government. So add one more to the list. Good times. Now, as Matt Strauss is pointing out, good news, COVID-19 case counts in South Dakota have completely collapsed. Which, by the way, is happening pretty much everywhere. Weird, the timing, right? And that's not because they're doing anything different. In fact, that's the point. In fact, their actions have clearly and unequivocally led to more problems in every sense of the word, in every case, I should say. But they're going to claim that what they're doing is what caused all the... Just like they do with vaccines from the very beginning. As I've shown in the past, there's endless examples of evidence showing that there a lot of polio, for example, was actually already on the decline. And the vaccine implementation actually made it spike again, but then it went back down. It was already naturally declining. And they say, yay, the vaccine solved everything. And that's sort of what's happening now. Recall that South Dakota never instituted a lockdown. So if they never did a lockdown, how do you explain that, guys? Supposedly not locking down is what's causing everything bad everywhere. We're all going to die. But nope, guess not. We don't know why the counts have collapsed. I would not rule out herd immunity. Sure could be, or it could be PCR testing adjustments and all kinds of other things. But who cares, right? Because it goes down and they'll just brush it away and say, we did it, not Trump. Because they want to drive in the two-party illusion. That's what this is really about. But here's a sea of anti-lockdown protesters in Vienna showing you that they will not take it. But where's the media? Nobody's talking about it. There's a huge amount of protests happening. Ooh, that's loud. A huge amount of protests. Let's see. Look at how huge this is. Did you hear about this on the media? No, you won't. You just won't. Because they don't want you knowing what's really going on. They never do. Paris, France. Massive lines of desperate people lining up for food rations. Food rations. The pandemic bringing in absolute desperation of those out of work. This was all part of the plan. According to X-Rise, this is only the beginning. But look at this line of people waiting for food in France, right? We're talking about Western countries here, and this is what your government did to you. Now, if this was happening anywhere else, if this was happening in Iran, they would be falling all over themselves to point out why Iran did this and how incompetent they are. Because they're corrupt people that will use even human suffering to achieve their goals. But this is what your government has done to you. Now, this is an Irish politician telling you that this is probably what's coming your way. Year-long lockdowns, home orders, mandatory actions.
But I think there are three things people really need to know about it, which maybe doesn't come across in some of the debates. First of all, for us to do it on our own as the Republic of Ireland, it would not be fully effective, because of the border. And it's not people flying into Belfast and coming down to Dublin. It's somebody flying into Belfast, going to their home in Newry, infecting two people there, one of whom is a cross-border worker. So it would be a bit like soup in a sieve. It would slow things down, but it wouldn't be fully effective. The other thing, and we need to be frank with people about this, if we did it, it would probably be for a year. I think once you do a very dramatic public health care measure like that, or public health measure like that, it's hard to reverse. And I think we probably wouldn't reverse it until everyone was vaccinated. And then we'd be heading into the winter, and we wouldn't want to open up flights before Christmas. So, you know, people who maybe would like to take a summer holiday in August, people who maybe would like to see their relatives this Christmas they haven't seen.
So look at how casually he's talking about so you will not get what they have no right to deny you until everybody takes the vaccine. Just casual, right? Even as we know everywhere people are resisting it. But he's going, yeah, until everyone gets it, we'll lock down forever. You know, just year-long lockdowns, mandatory quarantines.
Next Christmas, that would probably be off the agenda. And thirdly, and again, speaking to my New Zealand counterpart, there's only so much of you can do. So they have about 32 hotels, 4,500 rooms. You know, it's detention centers, really. It's, you know.
Detention centers, really? Yeah, he literally just said that. That he's being honest about it, at least, that these hotels are really detention centers. I just showed you one. That's what these things are. And you're being put in this detention center if you don't do what you're told.
No, they're in hotels, but it's not tourism. It's quite a big operation. Security guards, testing, secure transport. You can only let about 500 or 600 people in a day. So that means even some travel that we now consider essential would not be permitted.
Because we wouldn't have the capacity.
We wouldn't, yeah. So people going to London for an interview, people who are travelling for education, people who want to see a dying relative, a funeral, we wouldn't be able to guarantee that travel would be possible. So I'm not saying...
So it's not essential to deal with your dying relatives or, you know, care about family members or anything other than what they deem is okay.
We're not going to do it. I am saying we are looking at it. By starting down this road of mandatory hotel quarantine, we're going to learn a lot from it. But I am saying that people need to understand that would not be fully effective and would have all those other effects as well.
Yeah, mandatory quarantining in hotels. That's what he just said. That's what is happening. How do we pretend we're existing in some kind of free state anymore? We're not. And all they're using is illusions left and right to continue to drive the idea that we need this stuff. Governments, news, and even hospitals are claiming that without lockdown society, the healthcare system would collapse. But here are 14 news headlines of many showing hospitals regularly overrun during cold and flu season. They're lying to you, making it out to be something unprecedented when it happens every single year. As I've already shown you before. Also, remember that we're talking about in ICUs, probably, what, 15, 19, 20 beds at the most, and then actively closing down other parts for safety, and then acting like because that's overrun, even though it's a small amount, that we're all in danger, and it's just people picture thousands of people in hospitals overflowing. That's not what they're misrepresenting the situation. But here it is, 2019. Some of Ontario's biggest hospitals are filled beyond capacity. Was that COVID-19? No, it wasn't. Was it all over? Were they quarantining people? No, they weren't. Hospitals in 2018, overwhelmed by flu patients, treating them in tents. 2018, rapid increase in flu season. Caxes are, like, whether this at the same time was just trying to drive the illusion to drive flu vaccinations or not, the point is this is not a new thing. And they're driving it right now as if it's unprecedented. Look, I mean, I'll go through this yourself. 18, 2017, 2014, 2013, 2011, on and on. Hospitals overwhelmed by flu cases. 2009, swamped hospitals fear ER emergency. 2009, walking well flood hospitals with, it's on and on and on. Early flu outbreak has hospitals overflowing. Year 2000. It doesn't end, guys. But right now they're using that thing alone to justify, except Gavin Newsom now, who's just ignored it, even though it's higher than when he started because new politics? Who knows? But to finish with the last point here, I want you guys to recognize the PCR test. It's obviously the biggest linchpin in this illusion. As she's pointing out, Austria's positivity rate fell from 12% to 0.4 when PCR tests were replaced with lateral flow mass testing. The UK government estimated the false positive rate for lateral flow tests to be 0.32%. At 0.04% positivity rate, there is not a COVID problem in the Austrian community. That's only because they're using tests that are proper as opposed to tests that are having a huge false positive rate. There is COVID in hospitals in Austria. She's not denying that. The excuse that this was a data dump fails to explain why it was only negative results being dumped. Here's the article itself you can read, but it says up here again and again, addressed by the critics of the measures and the senseless tests of people without symptoms. The PCR test produces an enormous number of false positive results when the prevalence, i.e. the proportion of infected people, is low. And that has always been the case. and it has been. However, this has been denied time and time again by the media, politicians, and virology, quote, experts. The facts are that it's very clear that this is driving the numbers. And I want to finish off, for those that have seen this before, you can feel free and jump off if you'd like, but I want to reiterate this point yet again. And then add on one little part here that you haven't seen before. But for those that haven't seen this before, this is talking about the PCR test. This is exactly showing you that what she's talking about, as if as a common knowledge concept, is common knowledge. They know this is how this works. And as she's pointing out, it's still denied and refused by media, politicians, and experts, despite them knowing this is what can happen. This is called the epidemic that wasn't. 2007. As it says, Dr. Brooke Herdon, an internist at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center, could not stop coughing. It was the start of a bizarre episode at the medical center, the story of the epidemic that wasn't. For months, nearly everyone involved throughout the thought the medical center had had a huge whooping cough outbreak with extensive ramifications. Nearly 1,000 healthcare workers in New Hampshire were given a preliminary test and furloughed from work until the results were in. 142 people, including Dr. Herndon, were told that they appeared to have the disease. Thousands were given antibiotics and a vaccine. Hospital beds were even taken out of commission. Oh, there you go. Then, about 8 months later, sort of about the time frame we're in now, healthcare workers were dumbfounded to receive an email message from the hospital administration informing them that the whole thing was a false alarm. False alarm. Now, if you haven't heard this, get ready to have your mind blown. Not a single case of whooping cough was confirmed with a definitive test. Not one case. 8 months it went on with vaccines and treatments and hospital closure. Not one had been confirmed. Now, as they look back on the episode, epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists say the problem was that they placed too much faith in a quick and highly sensitive molecular test, you know, that led them astray. Gee, I wonder what test that would be. There are no national data on pseudo-epidemics caused by an over-reliance on such molecular tests. But Dr. Trish M. Pearl, an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins and past president of the Society of Healthcare Epidemiologists of America, said she said pseudo-epidemics happen all the time. Well, that's interesting. They don't hear that. If I said that on Twitter, you'd be called a conspiracy theorist. The Dartmouth case may have been one of the largest, but it was by no means an exception. Well, isn't that interesting? It's better. There was a similar whooping cough scare. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot that I adjusted the screen. Still looks okay. All right. There was a similar whooping cough scare at Children's Hospital in Boston last fall. This was in 2007, remember, that involved 36 adults and 2 children. Definitive tests, though, did not find pertussis or whooping cough. So again, they thought they had something, but then they took actions until finally definitive tests showed that they were wrong. Now, quote, it says, it's a problem. We know it's a problem. Over-reliance on these molecular tests that cause fake pandemics. She says, my guess is that what happened at Dartmouth is going to become more common. Well, she's more right than she knows. Many of the molecular tests are quick, but technically demanding. And each laboratory may do them in their own way. Weird. So they're talking about in 2007 what the WHO was forced to address in the middle of this pandemic. It's putting out a statement saying, well, make sure you're following the instructions because there's different variances. But yeah, they knew it in 2007, but somehow the WHO didn't discover it until the middle of COVID-19. Sure, that makes sense. But it says their very sensitivity of these tests makes false positives very likely. And with hundreds of thousands of people are tested, as occurred at Dartmouth, false positives can make it seem like there's an epidemic. Well, what do you know? So they're basically saying the sensitivity of the test, which we know, can cause false positives. That's a given. But when you test hundreds of thousands of people, well, it's guaranteed you're going to have a lot. Well, that's what's happening, guys. False positives can make it seem like there's a pandemic. Well, what do you know? Where have we heard that before? Well, I wanted to also point out, funny enough, that Dr. Mark Perkins, who is stating, basically says, he says you're in a little bit of no man's land, talking about PCR tests with these new molecular tests back in 2007. But this is a person who is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Quote, all bets are off exact performance. Yes. Well, I find it relevant that this person or this group was involved with this scenario. where they probably took note of how this test led to a fake pandemic and said, aha, something we can use. Sure, I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist, right? But recognize where we are right now and recognize that their involvement with a person that took part in this is very relevant. It says, of course, that leads to the question of why rely on them at all. At face value, they say, obviously, they shouldn't be doing it. Great. So Dr. Pearl is saying they shouldn't be relying on these tests. Well, guess what? We know that today. But it says, at Dartmouth, this is where you understand it was the PCR test. The decision was to use the PCR test for polymerase chain reaction. It's a molecular test that until recently, this is 2007, was confined to molecular biology laboratories. The Dartmouth whooping cough story shows what can ensue. And apparently what they refuse to learn lessons from, or rather that they choose to use, to utilize. It says, yet, epidemiologists say one of the most troubling aspects of the pseudo-epidemic is that all the decisions seem so sensible at the time. Yeah, it seems pretty clear. The point here is that the argument is that not everyone's involved in some massive manipulation. Some of them are. But I argue, by and large, most of these people are simply going along to get along. They know that people are in control, that people are their bosses, as well as the fact that they know that they're just supposed to do, I mean, if they have a test in front of them that says they're sick and they've got their superior saying that has been confirmed, well, they're going to go with it because they're listening to their superiors. So you can see how it seems sensible to people following orders, which is why we need to recognize that we're pretty much there right now. But here it gets even more important. It says that was the first problem in deciding whether there was an epidemic at Dartmouth. It says almost everything about the presentation seemed to suggest it was whooping cough. The second was the PCR test, right? So the first problem was deciding whether there was an epidemic. The second problem was the PCR test, the quick test to diagnose the disease. With whooping cough, she said, quote, there are probably 100 different PCR protocols and methods being used throughout the country. Yeah, again, so they're aware of this problem in 2007, yet they allow it to rip across, They use it to allow the padding of their narrative. That's how I see it. Or you could argue that they were so incompetent that they didn't realize that they knew this in 2007, and they fumbled through it again in 2020-21. And it is unclear, it says, how often any of them are accurate. Yeah, he's talking about PCR tests, guys. It says there were 100 different protocols all across the country, and they were unclear how accurate any of them were. It says, quote, we have had a number of outbreaks where we believe that despite the presence of PCR positive results, the disease was not whooping cough. What they're saying to you right here, guys, before this COVID-19 scenario, this PCR test was never utilized in a massive scale the way it is now. And it was never utilized in a way that was reliant on public policy. It was used in certain cases like this, or specifically biological and molecular biology cases, not the way it is now. I argue that they clearly saw the small cases. They understand the things like parasite stress theory, knowing that pandemics in general or threat of viruses cause people to fall into authoritarian government control. That's what it shows you. Multiple studies have found that. It found that they don't even need to have a real pandemic. They can fake one and it will allow the government to take control of the people. That's multiple studies. Derek Brose has written about it. Then you add on the fact that they go, oh, look, here's the tool we need. The PCR test that can be used to create the big idea of a false pandemic. And we'll make it on a massive nationwide scale. We'll make it on a worldwide scale. At Dartmouth, when the first suspect whooping cough case emerged and the PCR test showed whooping cough, doctors believed it. The results seemed completely consistent with the patient's symptoms, right? Seems to make sense. How's that? And it says that's how the whole thing got started. Then the doctors decided to test people who didn't have the cough. This is, quote, because we had cases we thought were whooping cough and because we had vulnerable patients at the hospital, we lowered our threshold. And they don't mean the cycle threshold. They mean just, you know, testing anybody to make sure they weren't wrong. Anyone who had a cough got a PCR test. And so did anyone with a runny nose who worked with high-risk patients. Actually, I'm jumping ahead. The point is, what they're saying here is they just said, you know what? We're going to test anybody who even moderately looks sick. And you know what happened. It said positive, positive, positive. And they weren't positive. But they said, well, they got a runny nose. And it said positive. And we know there's a whooping cough epidemic. So And you see how this happens. Quote, that's how we ended up with 134 suspect cases. Incorrect. Remember, there was not one case of whooping cough. And that, she added, was why 1,445 healthcare workers ended up taking antibiotics and 4,524 healthcare workers at the hospital, or 72% of all the healthcare workers, were given vaccination against whooping cough. 4,500. This didn't happen. Zero cases. Now, if you need any indication of how flagrantly PCR tests can overwhelm, I mean, we're talking zero. Not some and overblew it. We're talking not a single case of whooping cough and the PCR test was positive all over the place. That is your picture of how incompetent, what's a better word for it? How this test is not meant for what we're using it for. It says, if we had stopped there, I would think we all would have agreed that we had had an outbreak of whooping cough, pertussis, whooping cough, and that we had controlled it. But they didn't. They pushed forward, they tested with the definitive test, and suddenly found out 8 months later that it didn't even happen. Here we are, guys. Here we are. I don't understand why this is not relevant. It is, though. It's one of the most relevant things in this entire discussion. But no one cares. Here's another one. Lessons from a plague that wasn't. 2005. That is the year President Gerald Ford announced a crash program to inoculate every man, woman, and child in the United States. This was the 1976 pandemic. The one that was not real. Against swine flu. But the virus never became a killer. The vaccinations were halted 2 months after they began, after reports that 500 people who received the shot developed a paralyzing nerve disease and more than 30 of them died. Why? Because we know now that they actually lied to people and said they were giving a certain vaccine. They swapped them out at the last minute, didn't test the second one, and knew in the literature that it could cause exactly what it caused. And here we are. If scientists were wrong in 1976, could they be wrong now? Well, we know that. Part of the problem was convictions outpacing evidence. The epidemic that never was is what they called this one. I don't think that's happening today, they argue. Well, I think they're wrong. The World Health Organization and many European nations, for instance, did not see what the fuss was about. So here they are back at a time when the WHO was going, what are you guys talking about? That's not going on. I argue since then they've been completely co-opted by the people that want it to always be going on. Today, they're busily preparing for a pandemic. Why? Because things have changed for the WHO. Doubts grew through the summer of 1976 when the virus was not detected outside Fort Dix. Remember, it came from Fort Dix, as far as I'm concerned, probably like all the rest. The point is, well, Fort Detrick in a lot of cases, if it was in Fort Dix, which is, by the way, where it came from, as we now know, but here's the point. It was not detected anywhere outside of it. The first death turned out to be the only known one from the virus. Moreover, studies suggested that several hundred people at Fort Dix had been infected but never even got sick. So, again, it appears to be something that wasn't as severe as they said it was, but came specifically from their manipulations in the fort, and then they made it out to be some kind of other thing and inoculated people, but it wasn't what they said it was. As it says at the bottom here, one is that making clear what is not known is as important as stating what is known. Another is that the program should be reevaluated periodically rather than left on autopilot, talking about lessons that we should learn from what happened. And none of those things happened. Do they ever talk about what they don't know? No. They scream at you about what you should know. Are we reevaluating the program? No. It is left on autopilot exactly like they... these are never meant to be lessons. These are meant to be things they placate you with, and they go forward with what they want to do. That's what we're staring at. It's another example. Let's see where we're at. 243? I think you get the point. I was going to play that video again, but it's the same point. I hope we understand, guys, that this is, maybe I'll play that on the way out so you guys can see that before we go. The swine flu video, let me cue that up before we go here so I can play that on the way out because that's super important. There we go. All right, so the last thing I want to finish with, again, something you guys have seen, but only a couple of choice parts. This is to finish off, coming off of this, right? Coming off of a time where they're telling us, at the time, in 1976, which we know wasn't real, which we know the government lied about, the WHO was saying, you guys are basically, didn't say they're lying, they said they don't see what the fuss is about. Jump forward to today, all they can do is talk about this, and everything is based on the lies we're already seeing. But here's where something changed. All right, remember, I've showed you this before. This is 2011. Sometime between 2011 and now, there was a huge shift. Because how can you argue that what we're, this is, again, from 76 to even 2011, they seem to be sort of on the same page here, kind of going, well, this doesn't seem to be, and I'm not talking by and large the entire organization, but I'm saying there are some people in WHO who are speaking out about exactly these kind of fake pandemics. This is called Health is More Than Influenza, from the WHO. Okay, what it says is the repeated pandemic health scares caused by avian H5N1, which was another one that didn't turn out to be anything, and the new H1N1, which repeatedly has been nothing, but they lie about it and scare people about. Human influenza viruses are part of a culture of fear. Not mistakes, but fear. Manipulating you by lying and using fear to get things done. Worst case thinking replaced balanced risk assessment. The precautionary stocking of largely useless antivirals and irrational vaccine policies. Gee, I wonder why these people got kicked to the curb. Against an unusually benign H1N1 virus wasted many billions of euros and eroded the trust of the public and health officials. The pandemic policy was never meant, was never informed by evidence. Let me say that again. The pandemic policy was never informed by evidence, but by fear of worst case scenarios. Why can't we learn from this stuff? This is what's happening now. And the point is, the people that pointed out the problem clearly are not listened to. Now there's people like Tedros in there that does what he's told. It says there is, in both pandemics of fear, the exaggerated claims of a severe public health threat stemmed primarily from disease advocacy. Why won't that highlight for me? Man, that's weird. There we go. From disease advocacy by influenza experts. Advocacy. So meaning that WHO is pointedly saying, look, this whole thing was driven by people who have a vested interest in making it happen. Advocating for, these are influenza experts that are driving it based on wanting to be the expert in this case. It says there is no reason for expecting any upcoming pandemic to be worse than the mild ones of 1957, 1968. No reason for striking preemptively. No reason for believing that a proportional and balanced response would risk lives. Yeah, get these guys out of the way. They're not part of the plan. It says the key to responsible policymaking is not bureaucracy, but accountability and independence from interest groups. Literally the opposite of where we are right now. It's all about public-private partnerships today. We are literally one and the same with these interest groups. Decisions must be based on adaptive responses to emerging problems, not definitions, such as how the current WHO is evolving definitions around herd immunity while they're already being proven wrong in real time. This is the reality of where this whole thing is. It is completely an illusion in every sense of the word. Completely. For those watching this on replay, this whole thing has been up and down the entire time. The stream has been cutting out, jumping up and down. It's incredible. It's incredible. But you're watching this on BitChute or Odyssey or Rockfin, and you're smart because YouTube is a broken, disgusting dumpster fire, and they will continue to censor and manipulate everything. So again, if you're watching on YouTube right now, the question is why? Why are you here? Thank you for watching The Last American Vagabond, but try to find other ways to consume this content because YouTube will control your view. They will cut it right when things are supposed to be said or important things are being spoken. So I'll play these two clips on the way out because I want to play both and because I want to make sure they see them and make sure the point gets across. But guys, question everything. It's never been a more important time to be asking every question. They lie to you about every damn thing that gets in front of you. It's just time to realize it. It's time to be aware that these people, their entire job rests on deluding and deceiving you. The government, that's what these people do. It doesn't mean we can't have some better situation in the future, but apathy has allowed this for so long that it's become a job to be a corrupt politician. Remember, it used to be a public service. These people used to actually have jobs, and then they would also serve their people. I almost said government, but you see, even I slip. It's not the government. It's about serving the people. But see, you want to say serve the government because that's the way that we see the government as a controlling factor today. It shouldn't be that way. We are supposed to be controlling the government. This whole thing has been flipped around. We need to break free from that illusion. We need to fight back. It's time. Thank you for being here. Thank you for thinking for yourself. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
In Beijing, huge lines for mass testing and everywhere digital surveillance.
I need to scan to prove to the driver that I'm healthy, and that information also goes for contact tracing.
A World Health Organization team is in Wuhan to explore the origin of the virus.
There's been a lot of blame being put around about this pandemic. It originated somewhere.
The first cluster of cases traced to a market.
It still isn't clear whether the Huanan market was the source of the virus, though outside experts believe it was a starting point for the outbreak.
Where Chinese officials took samples over a year ago.
And why has the data not been shared?
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
What about live animal samples?
It doesn't tell you anything. I do not suspect it's coming from what we originally thought.
The flu season is upon us. Which type will we worry about this year? And what kind of shots will we be told to take? Well, 46 million of us obediently took the shot. And now 4,000 Americans are claiming damages from Uncle Sam amounting to $3.5 billion because of what happened when they took that shot. By far the greatest number of the claims, two-thirds of them, are for neurological damage or even death, allegedly triggered by the flu shot. We pick up the story back in 1976 when the threat posed by the swine flu virus seemed very real indeed.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States, as well as 20 million deaths around the world.
See how easy it is to...
Thus, the U.S. government's publicity machine was cranked into action to urge all America to protect itself against the swine flu menace.
Influenza is serious business. During major flu epidemics, millions of people are sick and thousands die. Well, this year you can get protection. The vaccines are safe, easy to take, and they can protect you against flu. So roll up your sleeve. Protect yourself.
One of those who did roll up her sleeve was Judy Roberts. She was perfectly healthy, an active woman, when in November of 1976, she took her shot. 2 weeks later, she says, she began to feel a numbness starting up her legs.
I joked about it at that time. I said, I'll be numb to the knees by Friday if this keeps up. By the following week, I was totally paralyzed.
That year, but they could. One of those samples was respiratory. It hit back.
I've never taken any other flu shots, but I felt like this was going to be a major epidemic.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold. An Army doctor here sent samples of their throat cultures to the New Jersey Public Health Lab to find out just what kind of bug was going around here. One of those samples was from a Private David Lewis who had left his sickbed to go on a forced march. Private Lewis had collapsed on that march, and his sergeant had revived him by mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. But the sergeant showed no signs of illness. A few days later, Private Lewis died. The New Jersey lab identified most of those soldiers' throat cultures as the normal kind of flu virus going around that year, but they could not make out what kind of virus was in the culture from the dead soldier and from four others who were sick. So they sent those cultures to the Federal Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, for further study. A few days later, they got the verdict, swine flu. But that much publicized outbreak of swine flu at Fort Dix involved only Private Lewis, who died, and those four other soldiers who recovered completely without the swine flu shot.
If I...
Center for Disease Control in Atlanta is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program, and he pushed it.
You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed. There had been cases in Australia that were reported by the press, by the news media. There were cases in...
None confirmed. Did you ever uncover any other outbreaks of swine flu anywhere in the world?
No.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form.
giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine, and that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A.
Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
Well, I would think that you're in charge of the program.
I would have to check the records. I haven't looked at this in some time.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage if you get into a mass immunization program.
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hatwick?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hatwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge.
Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hatwick, that there had been case reports of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
How'd you know that?
By review of the literature.
So you told your superiors, the men in charge of the swine flu immunization program, about the possibility of neurological disorders?
Absolutely.
What would you say if I told you that your superiors say that you never told them about the possibility of neurological complications?
That's nonsense. I can't believe that they would say that they did not know that there were neurological illnesses associated with influenza vaccination. That simply is not true. We did know that.
I've said that Dr. Hatwick had never told me of his feelings on this subject.
Then he's lying.
I guess you would have to make that assumption.
Then why does this report from your own agency, dated July 1976, list neurological complications as a possibility?
I think the consensus of the scientific community was that the evidence relating neurologic disorders to influenza immunization was such that they did not feel that this association was a real one.
You didn't feel it was necessary?